Morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Thabo Rapo, Head of the Research Department at the Commission for Gender Equality.
Thank you very much. You're very much welcome. We're also still awaiting Ms. Lisa Vetten, who also will give a presentation. So, members, thank you for that. I'll then ask Nicolette van Salghous, our Acting Content Advisor, to just give us a rundown of where we are in tabling in terms of compliance by the different departments, because I think there's been the last 2-3 years some serious problems, not necessarily the departments, but by the previous administrations, to ensure that those matters are tabled in Parliament. But I must say there has been good work done over the last week or so, and I want to commend the Ministry of Police as well of assisting us to take the matter forward. And there was, I think, also 2 or 3 reports tabled last night. So indeed there is progress, and I think it's a good sign going forward. But let's ask our acting content advisor to brief us.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members and guests. Honourable members, in terms of the civilian secretariat for police, their act places a responsibility on the monitoring and implementation of the DBA by members of the SAPS through sections 6, subsection 1, sub C and D. The section also requires secretariat to make recommendations to the SAPS on disciplinary procedures and measures about non-compliance to the DBA. Furthermore, the Civilian Secretariat Act also provides for the cooperation of the SAPS to assist the Secretariat to monitor and evaluate the compliance with the DBA. Honourable members, excuse me, in terms of the reporting periods, the Secretariat has tabled the reports in today's ATC from April 2015 to March 2016 as one report, and then also for April 2016 to September 2016. The only report now outstanding from them is from October 2016 to March 2017. The committee also has several engagements on the DBA, however, none of the reports were discussed. Honourable members, looking at the SAPS, they also have a legislative mandate in terms of the Domestic Violence Act to report to Parliament twice yearly on the non-compliance to the or compliance and non-compliance to the DBA, and also make state what has happened in terms of disciplinary actions against members. Honourable members, the last report that was tabled was on the 19th February 2016 to the Select Committee. However, in today's ATC, the SAPS have tabled a report for the period April 2015 to end September 2015, and then also from October 2015 to March 2016. Honourable members, as such, there are still 2 reports outstanding, but the Ministry, as indicated by Chairperson, has taken full responsibility, and the new Minister stated that those reports will be tabled as soon as possible. Thank you.
For that update, so of our program, those reports that we that hasn't been tabled, we can't discuss that today, but we will deal with that in August in our follow-up meeting. So thank you for that report. Also welcome to Ms. Lisa Vetten. We're glad you are here, and we're looking forward to your input. Maybe just in terms of our program, we will first have SAPS, then the Civilian Secretariat, then Ms. Vetten, and then lastly the Gender Commission in terms of presentations. And members, then after that we will go to engagement. So we'll take all the presentations, and then after that we'll do the necessary interaction. So, General Masia, over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. We have taken note of the concerns, and we are going to work on it on the late tabling. We will make sure that we submit our reports in time to the Ministry so that it can be tabled in terms of the regulations and as well as the act of the DVA. I am going to allow General Mamuteti to lead us with the presentation of the reports that were tabled in Parliament yesterday, because we had prepared the other report, but we, as per your direction, Honourable Chairperson, we are not going to do it. We are only going to discuss the ones that were tabled yesterday. General Mamuteti.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm going to be presenting the compliance reports of the South African Police. The content thereof of the presentation will be the obligatory requirements in terms of the DVA, the statistics relating to each 6 months period, as the General has already indicated that we're only going to concentrate on the two biannual reports, the training and capacity building that we have embarked on as South African Police, which will also include the public education and awareness campaigns, the victim empowerment programs that we are having, the monitoring and evaluation of the stations that we have identified, and the continuous improvement monitoring the integrated, where we are also being able to join with the other stakeholders to monitor progress at the stations, and the concluding remarks. As I've indicated, we are obliged as the South African Police in terms of the Section 18, Subsection 5 of the Domestic Violence to submit 6 months report to the Parliament regarding the number and particulars of complaints received against members in respect of any failure contemplated in the Subsection 4A, the disciplinary proceedings instituted as a result thereof and decision emanating from such proceedings, the steps taken as a result of recommendations made by the Civilian Secretariat of Police. Therefore, I'm going only to concentrate on the period under review of the 1st April to September 2015, as well as October 2015 to March 2016, as those are the only reports that have been tabled. So the statistics for the period 1st April 2015 to 30th April 2015 stands as follows. You can see the number of non-compliance cases that were reported within the respective provinces. The total number thereof is 291. The leading province is Western Cape, followed by Northwest, and then Free State and Limpopo. The rest are actually below. Number of complaints against members for that period, if I may indicate in terms of the nature of disciplinary steps instituted against the members in terms of the DS1, where remedial steps were taken after the interview was conducted with a member where the misconduct was not serious. We had 131 for the period under review. And the verbal warning that were issued after the interview where the misconduct was not serious, we had 26. And the written warning that was issued where the disciplinary steps were not serious were 6. And then the DS4A, departmental investigation, which were under review under that period, during that period, were 128. But I can still confirm that we also have made a follow-up on those outstanding investigations, and all of them have been finalized in all the provinces. We also have departmental investigation where they were found not guilty as 0 and guilty as 0. So this is the statistics per province and actually indicating the number of, I mean, per month. We can see that we had actually a challenge during July where Limpopo had 11, and August they also had 23, and September they also had 15. So for July, August, September, Limpopo actually was dominating. And we also had Northern Cape that was also dominating during August, which is 32, and September they had 9. And Western Cape, they had 29 in May, which was high, and June 38, and they also had 8 during September.
General, maybe just a point of clarification. Is it correct that in the province of Mpumalanga there was no complaints? Mm-hmm. Is that possible?
that's the other thing that we're trying to follow up. But in terms of the information or the statistics that we got from them, they reported zero. But we are making a follow-up in that regard. For this period, we got zeros, zeros, zeros. So these are the decision emanating from the proceedings instituted against the members who failed to comply per province again. You will see that we have remedial steps after initial, which is 31, of which Limpopo was having 49 and Northern Cape was 59. The verbal warnings, we only had 10 Free State, which is the highest, and 12 at Western Cape. And then the written warning, we only had 2 Free State, Northwest and Western Cape respectively. Departmental investigations mostly were Free State. We also had 3 in Gauteng, 13 in KwaZulu-Natal. We also had 3 in Northwest and 68 in Western Cape. As I've confirmed, all of them, they have been finalized. Number of members who have identified as alleged perpetrators during this period, the total number of members were 91 in terms of Form 1, because we also have this form that we introduced where we are able now to track the members who are victims and also those that are perpetrators. We have Western Cape here as also the highest with 50 members who are victims, and the number of stations thereof is 37. We had 1 in Northwest with 1 station, Northern Cape 8 with 8 stations, Mpumalanga with 2 and 2 stations. They have perpetrators, but they don't have an issue around compliance. So, and the number of members identified as victims in terms of the Domestic Violence Act, we had also Western Cape as the highest there with 9. The number of stations thereof is 9. Northern Cape, we have 3 stations. Mpumalanga, they have 1 with 1 station. And Gauteng, there's 2 with 2 stations involved. Free State is 2 with 2 stations involved. And Eastern Cape with 1 and 1 stations involved. But one thing that I can also indicate is that our victims also, once we have identified them, we also refer them to EHW for them to be getting counseling. So the one for the firearms, you will see it will appear in the next reporting period, because although we were monitoring it at that period, but it was not included in that period. But we can confirm that we have made a follow-up with the provinces to give us an indication of the firearms of the members that were involved as perpetrators, to indicate to us what are they. What were the results in terms of Section 2, or whether the firearms were being removed. So for the period, the 1st October 2015 to 31st of March 2016, the non-compliance thereof for Eastern Cape is 14, Free State is 125, Gauteng is 59, KwaZulu-Natal 18, we have Limpopo 128, we have Mpumalanga now coming with 3, we have Northwest with 9, we have Northern Cape with 16, and Western Cape with 269, still leading Western Cape, and then followed by Limpopo and Free State. Number of complaints against the members in terms of the specific period, then it will indicate the provinces, but highlighting the months from October to March, where it will indicate that we actually had a challenge in Free State during December. And we also have the highest day, February and March. And Gauteng, we had a problem during January, which is the highest with 35, and also March with 14, but the total is 59. KwaZulu-Natal, the highest is during February. And Limpopo, the highest was during February also. Mpumalanga only reported 3 in February. Northern Cape, the highest was 8 in November, only 1 in January. Northwest was actually the highest was in January. The other period was 4 in November, and the others were 2 each month. Western Cape, which is the highest, they had recorded 15 in October, 16 in November, 63 in December, 98 in January, and 70 in February, and 7 in March.
I just want to know clarification of that heading. It says total number of complaints by or against SAPS members. Is it against?
It's against, Honorable Chairperson. Okay. That was the typo.
Okay.
I apologize. Okay. So the number of complaints against the members for the specific period, which talks now to the nature of disciplinary steps instituted against the members. The remedial steps taken against the members after initial interview where the misconduct was not serious, we had 357. The verbal warning that was issued, 79. The written warning that were issued, 15. The departmental investigation during that period was 190. I can also confirm that we have follow up on this under investigation, and all of them were finalized. And over and above here, we also had 4 that were submitted to Civilian Secretariat for exemption, on of which all of them were granted. So this is the breakdown per provinces in terms of the remedial steps. The remedial steps were the remedial steps after the interviews. We have Free State with 77, the highest. The highest is Limpopo with 128, followed by Free State with 77 and Gauteng with 55. Non-serious verbal warning, we have Free State, which is the highest, with 42, and then we have Western Cape with 23. The written warning, we only have Western Cape with 11 and Northwest with 1 and 3 at Free State. Departmental investigation on serious cases where they were still under investigation, we had a total of 181 in Western Cape, and we had 2 in KZN and 4 in Gauteng, 3 in Free State. The number of members that were identified as the alleged perpetrators, we had 5 in Eastern Cape, we had 8 in Free State, Gauteng we have 7, KZN 13, Limpopo 4, Mpumalanga we had 1, Northern Cape we had 2, Northwest we had 6, and Western Cape we had 15. And the stations involved, and just next to them, is 3, 5 for Free State, 3 for Gauteng, 9 for KZN, 4 for Limpopo, and 1 for Mpumalanga and Northern Cape respectively. Also 3 for Northwest and 18 for Western Cape. Number of members that have been identified as victims for Eastern Cape, there were 5, where three stations were involved. Free State were 10, with 7 stations involved. Gauteng were 2, with 2 stations involved. KZN were 5, with 5 stations involved. Limpopo and Mpumalanga, they had 0s respectively. Northern Cape was 1, with 1 station involved. And Northwest, 3, with 2 stations involved. And Western Cape with 19 and 18 stations involved. The seizure of the firearms for SAPS members who are alleged to be perpetrators, we can see that we have managed to seize the 41 firearms of those members that were identified as perpetrators. Of those 41 firearms that is coming from 108 members that we have identified, 67 were the members who were not issued with firearms, but 41 were those who were issued with firearms which we could be able to seize. So that is the figure. Eastern Cape we seized 2, Free State 4, Gauteng 3, KwaZulu-Natal 6, and Mpumalanga 1, Northwest 3, and Western Cape were 22 firearms that were seized. So this one, I think we should skip it for the purpose that it has not been tabled. Yeah, so we can move to the other slides of the national. For us to be able to implement our Domestic Violence Act effectively, we also have made sure that we have the victim-friendly rooms at police stations. And with the police stations where there's no victim-friendly rooms, there will be a private space where the people are being interviewed for that purpose. So for the number of stations within the province of Eastern Cape, the stations that have victim-friendly rooms is 158. And then for Free State is 78 stations that have the victim-friendly rooms. For Gauteng is 141, KZN 148, Limpopo 81, Mpumalanga 78, Northwest, Northern Cape 70, Northwest 66, and Western Cape 148. So a total number is 962. And we also have satellite stations which also have those victim-friendly services. So we have Free State, which has 10, Gauteng, which has 3, KwaZulu-Natal 1, Limpopo 1, Mpumalanga 3, Northern Cape 1, and Western Cape 21. So in total, we have 40. Contact points, we only have one in Western Cape, which has the facility. The international airport, we have one in Gauteng, we have one in KZN, we also have one in Western Cape. Also the FCS unit, we also have one in Eastern Cape, we have 3 in Gauteng, we have 10 KZN. Limpopo, we have 1. We have 1 in Limpopo, we have 5. We have 1 in Mpumalanga. We have 1 in Northern Cape. We have 8 in Northwest and 6 in Western Cape. The railway police station and couches where we have in the facilities only within the Western Cape province. So a total number of the victim-friendly rooms that we are having around the country is 1,045. Coming to the basic training and capacity building, the basic training contains a module on domestic violence, meaning that the new intake are also benefiting from those modules. The following learning programs are conducted through in-service training, where we have domestic violence learning program, which take 5 days. Domestic violence the trainer course would take 10 days. We also have a national victim empowerment training, which takes 5 days. So I can confirm that a total number of members that have been trained since 1999 to date is 249,530 members. Okay, we can agree that the figure is over the establishment, but it's due to the issue of people that have been maybe terminated their services and all these things that have been added here, but we can still purify it based on the people that have been dismissed or who have been discharged from the organization. And the following learning courses are presented as an integrated part of the basic police development learning program, where our members are being trained on domestic violence during the basic training, which will include the victim empowerment, the first responder to sexual offenses, domestic violence, and vulnerable children. And the division HRD is in the process of reviewing the domestic violence learning program, which will also be included in the integrated learning program and will consist of also the children and vulnerable groups. From the report that I've given, as the provinces and the national, we also are continuously conducting programs to address gender-based violence over and above the monitoring and inspections that we are doing at all stations to ensure that there's compliance. And we are also partnering with civil society and other government departments in that regard. And we are also planning a national dialogue between this period and July, where we're going to be involving the top management as well as the stakeholders to be able to talk to the issues around gender-based violence that is actually a challenge in the country. What we're saying, we want to make sure that when we finish with the dialogue, we have at least a program of action that we can be able to work on. So we are busy planning for that. In the past year, we also had a Braille booklet, which we produced, including those focusing on domestic violence. So we were trying to also consider the other affected or vulnerable groups to be able to get information relating to domestic violence. The booklets are being distributed to the institutions and schools providing services for the blind people. Members of SAPS conducted awareness campaigns to address gender-based violence and victim empowerment in support of calendar of events such as the Youth Month, the Women's Month, the Crime Victim Rights Week, Trafficking in Person Awareness Month, and then the 16 days of activism. But these are just some of those calendar of events that we are concentrating on, but over and above, we are continuously doing awarenesses to our members in relation to domestic violence and other issues relating to gender-based violence. Activities in partnership with social society, male-based mobilization, formation, and others. We have done the door-to-door visit, we have done the dialogues, we have done distribution of communication material, we have done the round table discussion, we also have done the outreach program, and we're still going to continue with that. We also have been continuously engaging on the monitoring of the stations and visiting those stations that we have identified as prevalence or lacking of reports, especially where there's no compliance, is where we are focusing on the monitoring and visiting of those. And members are engaged to ensure that they are able to implement the domestic violence. As part of monitoring the implementation of the national instruction, regular inspections of the relevant registers and forms are also being conducted by officers to monitor compliance by members. And the division also conduct station compliance visit to monitor the same. While serious cases of non-compliance have been identified, the commander is obliged in terms of paragraph 13 of Domestic Violence National Instruction 7 of 1999 to take action steps against such members. We are also reviewing this national instruction to include a paragraph where it will oblige the members who have protection orders issued against them to be able to report to their commanders, because it's also a challenge. You find the member is having a protection order but is not reporting. You only learn after an incident that there was a protection order. So we're going to include it in the national instruction that has been reviewed. Minor incidents of non-compliance are rectified immediately, and members are encouraged during station lectures and on and off-duty parades to ensure compliance. Participation on joint compliance forum with provincial and national civilian secretariat of police members and coordinators, that we are continuously having meetings to ensure there's joint compliance, revisiting jointly and standardizing measurements so that it may be applied in a comprehensive manner. We also have an integrated approach which we are busy doing with the JCS services. From 2016 to 2017 period, we commenced with a program based on the recommendation of Commission of Gender Equality for the improved integrated process between the courts and police. So we have identified four provinces that we are focusing on. Progress is as follows. Phase one was completed, which was involving the visiting of identified stations in the provinces that we have identified. That was Gauteng, Northwest, Northern Cape, as well as Western Cape. And the phase two has commenced in February this year and will be completed in July 2017, which is verifying if the actions that were implemented and what else requires attention over and above that we have identified. And phase three will be rolled out of the pilot actions to all the provinces once we have been able to gather what is it that we need to improve around the relationship between the court and the police in relation to domestic violence. So strengthening of the fora, as I've indicated, between the subs and civilian secretariat, we are having the forum that we have established or revived on the 17th of May, where we have reviewed the terms of reference for the compliance forum and provided the input for the national instruction on the domestic violence. And we are also revisiting the monitoring tools that we are utilizing between the two offices. And we have already planned the sessions that we are going to have a monthly forum. The monthly forum, provincial forum must continue at the provincial level. At national level, we're going to have quarterly meetings, and then twice a year, we're going to meet as the provinces and national to discuss the challenges. In conclusion, we can say there's a need for research to be conducted to determine what causes non-compliance by subs members to the DVA, because we have been training them. You can see the figure as it is highlighted. And as Honorable Chairperson, you have been indicating that it's more than 20 years, but the non-compliance is still a problem. But we need now to go back and say, but what is the cause? Because members have been trained, and this is not new, but why we still have members that are not complying? We also have to have a rejuvenation of joint compliance monitoring, especially between ourselves and the civilian secretariat, where we have agreed that we really have to work together hand in hand so that we can improve on what is happening. And the rolling out of the pilot to improve on the integrated services that we are having, especially between ourselves and Department of Justice. Thank you very much, Chairperson. That is, in short, what I can present.
Thank you, General. I just want to welcome the Chair and members of the Parliamentary Committee on Women. I'm going to just ask them to introduce themselves. Chair, to the back.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Phumzile Bengo. I'm the whip of the Portfolio Committee on Women.
Chairperson.
I'm Thandi Memela, Chairperson of the Portfolio on Women, with the President.
Very glad that you're also here. And please, at any time, we're going to first have the presentations. First, SAPS, we're going to have now the Civilian Secretariat. After that, we're going to have Ms. Lisa Betten and then the Gender Commission. But after that, please come in at any time, because I think a lot of the issues that we're going to deal with today has got a bearing on your field of expertise and also oversight. So we're very glad that you are here today. Thank you very much for coming.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, SAPS. We're going to Mr. Rapia from the Civilian Secretariat. Indication, I don't know whether it's got to do with the economic situation, but there's currently no tea, coffee or water available. As soon as it arrives, we will arrange a comfort break. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We have two reports. We are expected to make a presentation to table reports 6 monthly. But the report for 15-16, we have one report for the year. And then we also have the report for 15-16 in September. So those are the two reports that we're going to present. We just want to check your permission, Chair, because there are three, basically, it might be long. If in the 15-16 report we could just give the highlights and the recommendation, and then we focus on detail in terms of the past 6 months report, if that will be acceptable.
Yeah, highlight overview. You don't have to go to the percentages on page. I think three in detail, or four or five. Yeah, I think just the highlights. It is available, and members can ask specific questions.
Okay,
you're welcome. But what is essential? We're only going to deal with reports here today that's been tabled.
Yes,
those haven't been tabled. We'll deal in the August meeting.
Yes, that's the report that we are presenting. Ms. Matoma is the one who is going to make the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. As the Secretary has indicated, that we have two reports. So the first report is the one for the annual one, which dates from 2015 to 2016, which is, we have named it report number 7. So what I will do, I would not go through the whole report. I'll specifically go to the findings. But the presentation outline you will see as we will have introduction, limitation, compliance level, victim-friendly services, non-compliance by members, members as offenders of domestic violence, and the conclusion. I'll skip conclusion and then I can go to the second report. If you allow me, I would just indicate that we did 546 sessions. However, of the 546 sessions, there is a number of number of 58 police stations that was not fully captured. We couldn't fully capture 58 police stations because we followed up on the recommendations. And when we followed up on the recommendations, we used the different spreadsheet. So the total number that we used was 488. So those are the limitations that I just spoke to. In terms of the compliance level, we have realized that on all the 488 police stations that we visited, none of them achieved 100% level of compliance. Although when we look at the total average in terms of our provinces, we fall within the 80.6%. And we have a few stations that achieved compliance below 50%, which is in Free State we have three, Petrusburg, Steenmaker Road and Roadside. And Limpopo we have three as well. You will see one of them is Chitale, Griflote and Matlala and Giland. And then Mpumalanga as well as Northwest.
Maybe just, I mean, it's quite interesting if you also compare it with the SAPS presentation, especially in the rural areas. It's quite clear, I mean, the number of complaints coming through reporting is very low, and then there's also a link to non-compliance, also rural stations. So I think when we go to the questions, but I think SAPS, that's a major focus, because a lot of under-reporting and non-reporting, I mean, your station commanders must ensure that there is the availability of staff that will be friendly and deal with it. So I think it's a major concern and we must just note. But you can go ahead. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. In terms of the compliance level, you will see that we look at the number of stations, which is 488, and we look at our full compliance, we speak of 100%. So it's not 99%. Significant compliance is the one that started 99 after 70. Partial and then non-compliance. So full compliance were zero, significant compliance is 80.6, and then partial 17.98%, and non-compliance 1.41. In terms of the victim-friendly services, about 374 police stations out of the 488 that we can talk to had functional victim-friendly rooms, even though 96 of those were not fully resourced. So if you look at the graph, you will see that we have 278 that are functional and resourced. That is in terms of our of the national instruction, and 96 are those that were not fully resourced, and then 74 are those that are not functional, and then 30 does not have VFR, and then the 10% is the ones when we capture in our toll, we find that they are non-responsive. So those are some of the limitations that we come across all the time when we capture our spreadsheet. We have those that do not respond to all the questions. Non-compliance by members. The figure will show that...
Excuse me, Chair.
I'm sorry
to interrupt the presentation. It's a very small question, so I didn't want to have to burden the questions later. I'm just confused about the issue of non-response, because I assume the information is received in a face-to-face interaction with station management during the monitoring visits. So is that a case of refusal to answer, or station management saying they haven't got the information? I don't understand non-response in that context. Can I just get a clarification there?
Just get the definition.
Okay.
Thank you.
The non-response, you remember that most of the reports that we are presenting here are also coming from the provinces. So we get the spreadsheets from the provinces, and some of those spreadsheets from the provinces have non-response in them. So that's why we didn't want to just give you a number and then we short 10% that we're not explaining, to say why do we are short with 10%. So we need to indicate that we have this number, but it is short of 10%. And this 10% is the number that comes from the provinces where the spreadsheet shows non-response. Because we get this information from provinces, we cannot always control how provinces sometimes capture their information. Sometimes when they capture, they bring spreadsheets with non-responses. Those are the limitations that we come across when we consolidate.
Of course, it raises issues of methodology and also the issue of accuracy. And
Thanks, Chair. No, I was going to make the point that I just remembered that the thing to remember about the secretariat is that the actual implementation is happening through the provincial departments of community safety. So I'm just remembering that it's not entirely the team here who can account for those details. But then can I just suggest that whatever that template is should be able to break down whether it's about a refusal to answer, which I'm sure happens sometimes, or it's about being told that information is currently unavailable, because non-response is something that at face value doesn't make sense.
Okay, thank you. Comment noted. In terms of non-compliance by members, the figure, you will see that the figure shows that in Eastern Cape you have zero non-compliance. And then Free State, you will see that there is 64 of the stations non-complied, while disciplinary process happened in 62 of those. Gauteng, we don't record non-compliance. KZN, we record one non-compliance and one disciplinary process that was taken against a member. Limpopo, we record 130 non-compliance and a disciplinary process that happened in 115 members. Mpumalanga is zero, Northwest is 12, and then 11 disciplinary cases. Northern Cape is zero, while Western Cape is 28 and then 22 disciplinary process. So in total, you find that you have a non-compliance of 235 stations and then the disciplinary processes on 211 stations.
Maybe can I just raise this point, and I mean we've raised it during previous interactions with the secretariat, and I want to raise the committee's disclaimer on this slide, because I just want to get your view. I've got my view, and I know maybe some of the members' view, but you say that the previous slide, if we can just go back, I mean, to say in the case of the Eastern Cape, Gauteng, with the largest one of the largest populations in South Africa, and Mpumalanga province, there's full compliance. I think from a scientific and just the general, it is not possible. I mean, it is from a research, in terms of a general oversight point of view of MPs, it's not possible. I just want to say, do you believe this slide? I just want to get a sense that we just clean the table.
It's not really believing the slides. It's the fact that we are looking at the station visited. So it's the station visited during that period. So you could say that, which I believe that Gauteng is very big, but those stations that were visited during that period, this is what we found out.
So you agree that's not a representative sample of that province? Because you can visit four stations in one province, they can all, I mean, they can be compliance, but I mean, a lot of other stations will not be part of the sample. So at least you would agree with the contention that this is not a representative sample.
We totally agree that it's not a representative sample because we do not generalize in terms of our findings. And if you remember in the previous presentation that we've made in Parliament, you've questioned our methodology in terms of the sampling and so forth, and we've indicated that we are working with SDSA to try to rectify the mistakes that we are, or the shortcomings, if I may say, that we are experiencing. So the report was done before then we start our discussions with SDSA.
Thank you, Chair.
I'll echo your concerns as well. I'm from KZN, and most of the areas are rural, and there's a lot of unfavorable things happening there. So I actually say this is not a true reflection of what is going on.
Thank you, Chairperson. Other members on this issue? Honorable Molabazi.
Yeah, I'm very depressed. I'm from Gauteng, where things are happening. People, most of the things that we see on TV happen in Gauteng, and it recorded zero there. I'm very depressed, Chair.
Let's continue. Sorry, Honourable Bailey. Sorry.
Sorry, Chair. It's just my observation is about the very curious comparison between zero findings of non-compliance in Mpumalanga and the very low complaints from the SAPS presentation. There's something about that picture that's very curious and very worrying. It paints, yeah, there's something very wrong there.
I mean, we take it that this presentation is still based on the old model. You know, the committee raised in the previous meeting our serious concerns about methodology. We said you must talk to SA in terms of the sampling. But again, it's a skewed picture because maybe those stations in Limpopo and Western Cape is maybe just maybe the tip of the iceberg. We don't know. But, I mean, we need a picture that really puts the reality on the table that we can also know where should SAPS go in ensuring that there's compliance by members. But let's go to the rest of the presentation.
Thank you. Maybe when I come to the second report, you will see the difference, some kind of difference between the two reporting periods. So let's go forth. I note the concerns by the members. The graph that is in front of you talks to the members as offenders of TV. Out of the 488 stations that we visited and with provinces, 185 members were reported to have been offenders of domestic violence within the police station visited. Western Cape recorded the highest number with 74 members, and KZN recorded the lowest number with only two members. So if you look at the graph, you will see that Western Cape is 74, as I've indicated. Northwest is 28, and then Free State is 24. Eastern Cape is 16, and Gauteng is 15, and Limpopo is 12, with KZN being 2 and Northern Cape 4.
The same comments must apply to this slide as well, especially KZN. It's got 25% of the population in South Africa, most of the police stations, you know, so I don't think, you know, we can really argue that this is correct, unless we can be convinced. But please go into the other slides.
Okay, thank you. Members, as offenders of domestic violence, in terms of the Firearms Control Act number 60 of 2000, a person who in the past 5 years have been served with a protection order in terms of DVA or was visited by a police official concerning allegation of violence in the applicant's home does not fully qualify to possess a firearm. In this case, we're talking about the members. If a member has been found to have been visited with respect to an offense of domestic violence does not qualify to possess a firearm. So based on this clause, the SAPS has an obligation to remove firearms from any member who has a case of domestic violence against them. So the table below shows a number of members whose firearms...
I'm sorry, just a moment, Honorable Molabachi.
Can she repeat what she just said now?
Can you just maybe repeat your previous statement? Thank you.
In terms of the Firearms Control Act.
Member in what?
In terms of the Firearms Control Act number 60 of 2000, a person who in the past 5 years have been served with a protection order in terms of the DVA, that is the act, and was visited by a police official concerning allegation of violence in the applicant's home and does not qualify to possess a firearm. So it does not matter whether a person is an ordinary person or a person is a member of the police. So that's the statement that I'm referring to say that person, whether it's a member of the... it's a citizen, member of the community, or it's a police official, does not, is not required to carry a firearm. So in this case, if you are a DV offender, whether you are a policeman or you are just a community member, you will be treated the same. Okay, the table below shows the number of members whose firearms were seized. So in this case, we're talking about the members who are offenders of domestic violence. Firearms seized, it's 50 of the firearms were seized. Firearms not seized, it's 66. There is not applicable, it's 6. Not specified, it's 63. This is out of the 185 that I was talking about previously.
In the case of the 63 not specified, we can assume maybe they also retained their firearms because we don't know.
Possibly. I would like to go to the second...
Maybe at this stage, I made a promise to the audience that we will now take just a 5 to 7 minute break, just to a comfort break, but also an opportunity to have a cup of tea or coffee. Thank you. Then we'll return to the second
The presentation, Yeah, this one.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Right, thank you, members. If you can resume in 2 minutes, I'll appreciate it. Thank you. Right, thank you very much. We're going to continue with our meeting. Thank you, members. You're welcome to go ahead with the second presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The second presentation talks to April 2016 to September. The outline is similar to the one that I was presenting. I will skip this one. The introduction, the report talks to the 246 stations that were visited across the country during the period 1st April to September 2016. So this is the stations that were visited by us together with the provinces. The police station monitoring visits were based on the key focus areas. It's the same as the previous report that I've just presented. We look at the regulatory compliance. We look at the non-compliance by members. We look at the members as offenders of DV. We look at the training and the recommendations. In terms of the compliance level, even with this report of the 246, we found that there is no station that recorded 100% like full compliance. However, the majority of stations, which is 137, achieved partial compliance, which is between 50% and 69%, while 71 stations achieved significant compliance, and the remaining are the lowest compliance in terms of 0 to 49. So out of the 38 police stations rated as non-compliant, the one that were remaining, 13 are from Eastern Cape, 9 from Free State, 6 from Northern Cape, 3 from Limpopo, 3 in KZN, and 2 stations each from Mpumalanga and Western Cape.
Can I just maybe raise the issue? I mean, we must raise it out of a principle. When you come to Parliament, Secretariat, Secretary,
there must be quality assurance of documents. Now, mm-hmm. if you look at that last paragraph, clearly there wasn't quality assurance done. And that is totally unacceptable. I mean, we can't accept it. So really, I want to again put it on the table. Government officials are paid by taxpayers. As the Oversight Committee, when these presentations made to Parliament, it must be of the highest standard. And we can't accept it. Really, there must be the necessary command and control. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Unfortunately, we just realized that there was an omission in terms of KZN and some number there in terms of 38. The table below shows the average level of compliance for the station visited. Out of 246, again, there is zero full compliance. 28.8 of the 248 are significant compliance. 55.6 is partial compliance, and 15.4% is non-compliance. In terms of the service or serving of protection order or service of protection order, this is one of the areas that the SAPS is assessed on, and on the ability to serve protection order immediately after it is issued. As depicted in the figure that I'm going to show below, there are protection orders that were outstanding for longer than 2 months. In 25% of the stations, which is 62 stations of the police station visited, while the rest, which is 75% of the stations, protection orders were served within 2 months. If you look at the graph, that's how the graph is depicted, 75 PO served within time, and then 25% PO not served. So the considering the scourge of domestic violence and the intended role of the PO in contributing to the reduction of domestic violence, we feel that SAPS needs to put more priority in this area. In terms of the victim-friendly services, about 84% of the station visited had victim-friendly rooms, but the status in terms of the functionality varies according to the station visited. The VFR was fully functioning in 50% of the police stations, indicating that it was open and available for use 24 hours and had resources as stipulated in the National Instruction 2 of 2012, while 19% had functioning VFR that are not fully resourced. 15 of those stations had a VFR, but it was not functional as it was used for purposes other than victim support services. And the remaining 16 of the police station did not have the victim-friendly rooms. This is how the distribution in terms of the graphs of the station it's indicated. You find 123 fully functional, 35 functional but not fully resourced, 49 VFR not functional, and 39 no VFR at stations. In terms of the non-compliance by members, there were 112 non-compliance recorded in the 11 police stations, of which 111 were administrative non-compliance, and one is operational non-compliance, which means the one is in terms of the service delivery, the failure to conduct service delivery. The latter was recorded in Wellington Police Station, where a member refused to assist a victim of domestic violence. That is the one that I indicated above. Eastern Cape, Gauteng, Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal did not have any records of non-compliance. The table below that I'm going to show shows the number of members that have failed to comply with DVA and the disciplinary process that were taken and the outcomes in terms of the disciplinary processes within the station visited during the reporting period. So if you look at the table that is in front of you, we have the provinces, we have the stations, we have the number of members and the disciplinary proceedings that were conducted and outcomes. So if you look at Free State, it's only one station and the number of members were 16. And disciplinary proceedings were 16. And then the in terms of the outcome, it was a verbal warning. Northwest, we have one station, Makau. 5 members were found to have not complied with the Domestic Violence Act. And one disciplinary were instituted and is still under investigation. Limpopo, they are 6 stations there, and Cumberland still under investigation. Chilopsiku, no results provided. Sinova Rwana, 3 on the job training and 10 verbal warnings. Mujajisklo, 4 and 4 verbal warnings. Tsanin, 19 and 19 verbal warnings. Sosese, 7 and 7 verbal warnings. Northern Cape, it's one station. The outcome is still pending. Western Cape, it's Deft and Riversdale. You find these verbal warnings as well. And 5 in Deft, it's no steps were taken against the 5 members. Riversdale, 20 written warning, 4 found not guilty, 1 corrective counseling, and 3 pending. So those are the outcomes that are related to the non-compliance by the members of the SAPS. So when you look at members as offenders of domestic violence, we usually found that it's members. These members are members who has committed DV against their partners at home. The findings indicate that the majority of the victims, 20, opted to apply for protection orders, of which 2 were final and 18 are still interim protection orders during the time of the visit to the affected police station. 19 criminal cases were opened against members, of which 2 were later withdrawn by the complainants. This we find more often when we do the station visits, where you find that the partners, they come and report a crime and then they come back and withdraw the cases. The figure that is following will show the breakdown of action taken by the complainants against the SAFS members who have incidents of domestic violence reported against them. So members as offenders of DV, again, there are 29 stations that were reported to have members who are offenders of DV, with a total number of 54 members, 19 cases opened, as I've indicated, 20 protection orders, 22 firearms seized, and then Section 102 inquiries on the 12th and disciplinary proceedings on the 12th. The findings further shows that 22 firearms were seized, as I've indicated in the previous graph, despite that the fact that 26 protection orders application resulting in 18 interim protection orders and 2 final protection orders were made by complainants. Another area of concern, as reflected in the table below, is the minimal number of disciplinary action instituted against members who have DVA incidents reported against them. The finding reflects that only 10 disciplinary processes were initiated from the total incidents reported. 2 cases were withdrawn by the complainants. Out of these 2 cases, 1 member resigned. So steps taken against members for domestic violence offenses. Those are the provinces that have recorded the members who are offenders of DV, the stations, the number of members, number of protection orders in place, number of firearms seized, and the Section 102 inquiries. So in Eastern Cape, we have 3 members, and then no disciplinary process were taken. Free State, we have a member that was arrested. Investigation is pending, and the member is not suspended. In Gauteng province, 1 member found guilty, remedial action taken against another member. And then we have a member that has resigned. This is the member that we have indicated in the previous page. KZN, we have 1 station, and the firearm was seized. And no disciplinary proceedings were taken against that member. Limpopo, we have a number of them that are the offenders of DV. The only 1 disciplinary proceeding was taken against the number that is indicated there. We also have IPO and FPO served in the 3 stations that have indicated there. In terms of Northwest, we have 12 interim protection orders. In Mawatu, 12 interim protection orders in Ikageng, and 1 case referred to the DPCI, and 1 member received a written warning.
If we can go to the conclusions, I think the members have read the graphs.
Okay. In conclusion, SAPS is recording more administrative non-compliance by members, as the report reflects that 111 administrative non-compliance were recorded. This is a positive step as an indication that SAPS management is committed to address non-compliance by members with the provision of the DVA. So this means that there is more reporting in terms of the domestic DVA at SAPS, and it can be a negative in the sense that it's a lot, and a positive in the sense that, yes, SAPS, it's really making progress in terms of making sure that these cases are reported and they are recorded by SAPS. SAPS still face a challenge of members who are reported to be offenders of domestic violence. And based on the low number of internal disciplinary proceedings initiated against these members, it appears that SAPS handling of this process does not effectively address the challenge, nor ensure that members are held accountable for actions that are not in line with SAPS discipline regulations. This is due to the fact that if you look at the top tables, most of the steps taken are verbal warnings, most of them. In terms of the recommendations, SAPS provincial commissioners should strengthen the internal monitoring mechanism to enable timely identification and provision of remedies for areas where SAPS is still failing to comply. We further recommend that station commanders should ensure full adherence and compliance to the provisions of the DVA and related national instructions and take decisive disciplinary actions against those members who fail to comply or are themselves the DV offenders. Station commanders should also ensure that members serve protection orders to the alleged perpetrators immediately after it is issued by the court, or at least at the earliest possible time, because you find that some of the protection orders were not served even after two months that they were issued. The SAPS provincial commissioners and cluster commanders should take decisive disciplinary action against station commanders who fail to comply with the provision of the Act and the national instruction. This is considering the low number of firearms seized despite the issuing of protection orders against such members and the low number of internal disciplinary proceedings initiated related to that fact. The Supply Chain Management Division should provide the infrastructure and support necessary to ensure that provision of victim-friendly service in all police stations is in line with the provision of the National Instruction on Victim Empowerment. This is in relation with those stations that do not have victim-friendly rooms, and also those stations that have victim-friendly rooms, but they are not functional. Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe the one issue I think you've indicated in the first presentation, this one is going to be different, but if you look at page 10, Eastern Cape, Gauteng, Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal did not have any records of non-compliance. So clearly, if it was forked out to the secretariats, there's a major problem. So I think in the August meeting we will have to invite the secretaries of the provinces, the secretariats, because it raises huge questions about validity, quality assurance, and you know the consolidation of the report. I can't believe it that in the Eastern Cape, Gauteng, Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal there wasn't any records of non-compliance. It's impossible. It is impossible. So we must really then put a real disclaimer on these two reports presented by the Secretariat. I think our concerns previously expressed in terms of validity assurance, it still stands. There's nothing in the presentation today that convinces me that we made some headway. And I think in the August meeting we will have to have an indication, and maybe Stats SA will have to be here, to indicate what processes is in play to ensure that we improve on validity, get assurances from the secretariats. But we will have to invite the provincial secretariats and cross-question them on the methodology and feedback, because it's impossible to get a clear picture. Impossible. So, yes, Chair, the whip of the committee, yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think for us as the Portfolio Committee on Women, it's shocking because it seems as if there is nothing that has been done. That is why the escalating of domestic violence is very huge in South Africa. And the other thing is, I would like to know, I fully agree with you that we need to have those people coming so that we can have those questions, and we would also like to come to that meeting so that we can be there to listen to them on what has happened. Because on these two reports, it seems as if there's a little information that we have found in these presentations. but we need more because the issue of domestic violence in South Africa, there are many programs that have been made by the government and the Department of Women, but it seems as if there is nothing that has changed already. But we are very worried because we know that the people who got those domestic violence, they ran to the police stations to report those domestic violence. But for us, it seems as if actually it's true that people that are those who are victims, they are not being assisted in the police stations. But I would like to know how many protection orders have been issued, because here in the report, they have also, according to the provinces, maybe if they give us that information, and how many SAPS members who have been who have killed their partners and their kids using the firearms whilst on or off duty. And if the police member refused to assist the victim of domestic violence, according to your knowledge, what is the reason for not to do so? And why are no steps taken? And also on slide 13, it said that 54 members, offenders, now only 54 members that are offenders, but only 12 disciplinary proceedings have been taken. What happened to the others? Thank you, Chairperson.
Very much. Members, we will go to the other questions as soon as the other two presentations, but thank you very much for that. So long, we will wait for the other round before we go to the responses. I'm going to ask then Ms. Lisa Wetten of the Wits City Institute to do the next presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to be able to address the committee. What I've tried to do here is give a 16-year overview of the various attempts to try and hold the police to account for the Domestic Violence Act, because I think that overview gives us a little bit of an insight into where things are going wrong and where we are seeing some improvements and where we're not. I think also looking at the records that have been put together in of themselves are a way of measuring accountability, precisely because keeping good records is one of the duties that was imposed on the police in terms of the Act when it came into operation in 1999. So there are just three questions that I want to address in this presentation. What has oversight changed in the policing of domestic violence? I mean, oversight was put in place in order to make the police take responsibility for domestic violence, to stop treating it as a private matter between individuals and something they shouldn't be getting involved in. So oversight is a way of looking at, has this changed? What is different? Has the law had the effect we wanted it to? And the second question I want to look at is, how has oversight changed the policing of domestic violence? Trying to make the police more accountable actually changed the way that they police domestic violence? And then the last part of my presentation is going to look at what do we need to change in the policing of domestic violence in order to make the Act more effective. And so in putting together this presentation, I've drawn on the reports produced by the SAPS, by the CSP, and of course also the ICD, when it was still the ICD. And I've also looked at parliamentary minutes and reports, court decisions and media reports. So that's where I've drawn the information in order to put this presentation together. So just to start with, and this might be an answer to the previous MP's question, this is data from the Department of Justice, which sets out the number of protection orders applied for and granted since 2008-09. I mean, I think what is interesting is, as you can see, there's an enormous number. 275,536 applications made in 2015-16 alone, of which just under 100,000 were made final. What I think is interesting, I'm sorry I didn't put the figures in, but if you look at the warrants issued for the breach, if you calculate them as a percentage of the orders finalized, and that's one, it's not very precise because we can't always assume that the orders finalized would have led to breaches, but what is very interesting is that 17,396 represents approximately 19% of the orders finalized that year. So in 19% of the orders finalized, there would have been a warrant issued for the breach. But by 2015-16, this number has gone up to 40%. So what this is telling us is that the number of application protection orders is increasing, although the number of orders being made final is not actually increasing by that much if you look at the percentage. But the number of warrants issued for arrest is increasing. So quite clearly, this is requiring more and more policing of domestic violence. So I think these questions you're asking of oversight become very important. Is with this increasing number of warrants of arrest being issued, how are the police then doing? So if we look at the ICD, and I think you've spoken quite a bit about the quality of reports, I think if we compare the ICD, the SAPS, and the CSP reports, then we have to come to the conclusion that the ICD reports are really the most detailed. They gave us the most insight into what the police were doing. So between that, so just this information relates to that section of the Act, which says that whenever a member engages in non-compliance with the Act, it's misconduct. And in terms, and this misconduct must not only be addressed by the station commander, it must also have be reported to what was then the ICD and is now the CSP. So all misconduct and non-compliance that the police pick up must be reported to the CSP or then ICD, and they must then issue recommendations around what is to happen. So during, from 1st of January 2002 to December 2011, when the ICD stopped accepting complaints just before the change to IPED, they recorded 1,403 complaints. I think what is important is that three-quarters of these represent the failure to ensure the complainant's safety. And I want to come back to this detail because you'll see that the SAPS reports and the CSP tell us nothing about what's not being done. And we actually do need to know which failures are about not ensuring someone's safety. So you can see during that period, more than half were the failure to arrest the abuser, which is of concern. Another 13% were the refusal to open criminal cases. So somebody wants to open up a criminal case and we're chased away. I think that still continues to happen because what one hears women reporting is that the police saying to them, we're not going to open a charge, go and get a protection order instead. And then 12% didn't assist domestic violence survivors to find suitable shelter to obtain medical treatment. This is where they also didn't go and escort victims to collect personal property or seize dangerous weapons from the abuser. So, I mean, the 75% of complaints, what the Act was there to do, to create protection, and yet this is where we were seeing the bulk of failure. I mean, I think what is interesting is that the ICD would make the recommendations to the police when they received these complaints, and the police would have to say what they had done. But of all the recommendations that the police issued to the ICD issued to the SAPS, in 67% or two-thirds of cases, SAPS simply never bothered to respond. So I think the question is, was that just part of their general pattern of responding to what we call Class 4 complaints, which were the general complaints? And I think there is some interesting there is an interesting comparison that suggests that the police did actually treat domestic violence complaints as less serious than other Class 4 complaints. Because it was a review conducted by the ICD and the Institute for Security Studies that looked at 573 Class 4 complaints. The figures don't match because the periods don't match because the ICD data around domestic violence was not very consistent prior to about 2007. But in those general Class 4 complaints, they responded to about half the recommendations, as opposed to about a third of the domestic violence recommendations. So, I mean, admittedly, the comparison is not a nice, neat, precise one, but it is suggesting that the way the police responded to domestic violence complaints may have been different to the way they responded to other complaints. So if we shift to the CSP, now with the shift from the ICD's monitoring oversight to the CSP was still supposed to be receiving complaints of non-compliance, and you can see quite clearly from their slides, and if you match them to the police's, that is not happening. So in the first 12 months that the CSP was established, they received approximately 22 complaints in comparison to the 94 that the ICD received in the last 12 months of their existence. So it was a 77% decline. And there is a structural reason for this, which I want to come to the recommendation, which has to do with what appears to be the police's failure to sign off on changes to the national instructions that changed the words ICD to CSP. So it would appear that what is happening is that police in provinces say, but this is ICD, I don't have to comply with CSP, so therefore I do not have to send you information. Then we see, again, very low number of complaints, 27. Again, not one of these complaints was recorded, was sent to the CSP by the SAPS. These are complaints that the CSP identified while they were doing their station monitoring. And, I mean, what the CSP is picking up from that station monitoring is clearly very severely undercounting the extensive misconduct. So here, and I've managed to get some comparisons, CSP between 1st of April 2011 and 30th of September 2012, 49 complaints. If you look at what the SAPS reported in their annual report, and it's not a neat match, they've got 280 cases of misconduct. So quite clearly they are not forwarding as they are required to by the legislation. So, I mean, what that means, if the SAPS are not referring misconduct to CSP, then quite obviously CSP cannot issue any recommendations. And I think, again, in neither the SAPS or the CSP report, as you saw, we have no details as to what is the nature of the misconduct, what's going on. Is this all failure to fill out forms, or is it actually, once again, failure to arrest? So again, if we look at the SAPS, and I think, again, it's important to just point, just to raise a question, that SAPS doesn't provide information between 2009 and 2013. They didn't appear to be submitting reports. But so the figures appear once again in 2013, and again, it's issues that you've picked up. Is that in that period, three provinces reported no misconduct, and yet Western Cape recorded 186 cases of misconduct alone. So either you must think Western Cape produces the worst form of policing of domestic violence in the country, or the conclusion you must draw is that actually this is the one province where the police are doing some sort of, making some sort of effort to ensure that their members do their job. And you can compare that, I think, as you saw in the SAPS's report of Mpumalanga with 0% non-compliance. Again, in 2014-15, we have four provinces reporting no misconduct. I must say, the annual report for 2015 and 16 presents different figures to the figures that the police have just presented now for 2015-16. The annual report records 814 cases of misconduct, but the additions I've just made of the figures presented now suggest that there may have been 932. So I think there are some questions here as to why there might be different totals. I think, again, just a comparison is that where the police are saying 814 cases of misconduct, CSP is getting 235. So we're seeing, I think, a fairly consistent pattern here of not complying with that section of the Act. If we shift to these questions of compliance and actual station visits, I've just summarized what the ICD made available. As you can see, and I think the difference here is they were using somewhat different tools to those that the CSP have used. They did pick up a percentage of stations that were fully compliant, although this percentage seems to have declined over the last few years. Again, one doesn't know whether that's the difference in the nature of the monitoring rather than necessarily a change in the way the police were applying the Domestic Violence Act. That question is difficult to answer. This is from the CSP, and I think it only underscores the importance of the point you're raising about the need to bring in the provinces. Because if you take a look at provinces like Limpopo, how dismal 3 years' worth of monitoring is, 4% of stations monitored, 3% of stations monitored, then they manage a 38% increase. Eastern Cape is another province that is not doing what it needs to, 6% of stations monitored, 9%, then 19%. KwaZulu-Natal is another very poor performer, 13% of stations, 7%, 11%. So there's clearly a very variable quality going on within the provinces to monitor. So I think to be fair to the national CSP, it's very hard for them to report when they're getting what is not particularly adequate or even information from the provinces. I mean, I think Gauteng is the one province that seems to be able to record a fairly consistent standard of monitoring. Now, I think if you look at how has oversight altered over the years, and I think we must be clear that there has been a problem in exercising oversight over the DVA. In terms of the portfolio committee, the first time they actually did follow up with SAPS and SA, and the ICD was 7 years after the Act had come into operation in 2007. So I think there were 7 years where SAPS didn't do anything at all. ICD did actually submit reports, but SAPS didn't, and what seems to have compelled the police to report, to start reporting was the threat of legal action. I think what we also see is, so it's in 2007 that you start to see oversight being exercised by Parliament. In 2009, you can see the Auditor General actually starts to look at what SAPS and DVA are doing. And I think the Portfolio Committee on Women, Children, People with Disabilities, as was then, actually held public hearings. And I think there are important questions around to what extent have the recommendations that emerged from those hearings, because they were very comprehensive, to what extent have they actually been enacted? I think 2009 is also important because it's the first year in which a court case was brought against the SAPS for failure to implement the Domestic Violence Act. I think what is also really important is that if you look at this history of oversight, the times when it changes is when the Portfolio Committee gets involved. So I think if you're asking why there is non-compliance, I think we must look at the role that you've played in trying to force compliance. So I think there was a very important committee meeting in 2011, which results in SAPS issuing a circular around their duties. Then in 2012, we see oversight being transferred from ICD to IPED, from ICD to ICED. ICD becomes IPED, and what IPED then becomes responsible for, and which I think relates to the one member's question, where you're not getting information, is investigating the murders of female partners by police officers. So that's stayed with IPED, but I don't think that's remaining part of oversight to this committee. And then the other monitoring duties were transferred to the CSP. And I must say, I think this transfer has actually weakened and diluted oversight. And there are a couple of reasons why. First is that the Civilian Secretariat of Police, until December last year, when the regulations were issued, were not empowered to accept complaints and didn't have regulations guiding that. So in a sense, what happened was that that independent complaints mechanism was lost. And if anybody was unhappy with what the police had done, let's go back to the same station which had caused the unhappiness in order to report it. So I think that has been a real problem, and in going forward, I think one needs to look at how have the regulations issued last year actually had an effect in changing what's happening at provincial level. The other thing is that the CSP has no powers to investigate. It's merely, in some respects, what I'm going to call, it literally is an accounting agency. It counts things. It has no powers. It has no authority. So I think, in a sense, the shift from ICD, which did have somewhat more power, to CSP has actually weakened the capacity to hold the police to account. And I think just the fact that the police don't forward them complaints is an indication of that. However, that said, while I think there may have been a weakening at the level of law of the legislation, I think in practice some things do appear to have improved, is that there is a CSP SAPS compliance forum established, and the SAPS did put in place some workshops around processes and discussions of strategy. You can also see there's been an increase in the size of the SAPS's DVA training program. The numbers have increased, which I think is positive. And yet again, the SAPS tried to put out a circular reminding their members of their duties. So we can see that when the Portfolio Committee gets involved, it does prompt some action, which does produce some changes. And then, as I mentioned, in 2016, the regulations were gazetted to enable the provincial community safety departments to accept complaints. So I think the picture we see here is things strengthening, but then them being diluted once again. And I want to actually come to the question of protection orders, because I think one of the things we can see is that as the police are recording more complaints, I think more provinces are starting to tell them what's going on. I think they're getting better at producing documentation to show that they're complying. But the fact of producing documentation doesn't necessarily mean the way you police domestic violence has gotten any better. And I think if you want to look at the quality of the policing of domestic violence, and I think we must look at what information do we have about how well protection orders work? We don't have good national data. So what I've looked at instead is the number of killings and rapes where that have occurred when somebody has had a protection order. So I think we have one study, but for 2009 only, unfortunately, but in that year, of the over 1,000 women who were murdered by their partners, one in 20 of them, when she was killed, had a protection order at the time. That should concern us seriously, because it's saying one of two things. Number one, she died because the police failed, they were negligent, and they didn't do what they were supposed to. Or it's pointing to a particular category of men who are particularly dangerous, who even if you put a court order in place, it does not deter them. And we need to understand more about who are those men and what steps do we take to put the necessary protection in place. So I think in terms of looking, I think we can see that there are certainly cases where the police have unquestionably been negligent. And I've just given some examples. 2009, as I said, the police were successfully sued following a rape. This woman had she had a protection order. She called the police. They refused to arrest him, didn't see a problem. They left. He raped her. Pretoria, similar scenario. Again, she called, gone to the police. They hadn't informed her of a protection order, hadn't offered protection. He raped her, and he attempted to murder her new partner. In 2010, this is a newspaper case. We have no idea what happened. But this particular individual committed, killed his children and committed suicide while his estranged wife was begging the police to act on a protection order. She was actually showing them an SMS that he'd sent her saying, this is what I'm going to do, and the police still would not assist her. In 2012, again, another Gauteng matter. She was stabbed to death by her ex-boyfriend with a long history of abuse, which included burning down her house. Again, she had a protection order. Police didn't act on any of these incidents. In 2015, the police were ordered to pay damages to a woman who'd been assaulted and arrested by a police member after she attempted to lay charges of assault against her husband at Lanesia South in Gauteng. I must say we don't know in any of these cases what was the outcome of the disciplinary proceedings against the member concerned, and I think it's worth asking. In 2016, last year, the police settled out of court for an undisclosed sum following a murder. In this particular case, this woman had made many unsuccessful attempts to persuade Sophia Town Saps to act in protection order. Her ex-partner set the house alight, and her mother, who was bedridden, burnt to death. And then last year, and this is a question that I think, when the police presented their disciplinary data for 2015-16, I would have expected that this case might have been here, because this incident occurred in December 2014 in Kales River. This woman was abducted by her estranged partner. He raped her throughout the night. She managed to escape and go to the Kales River police station the following morning, where the police chased her away and said she was drunk. She then went to court and obtained a protection order, still couldn't get the police to act on it, but finally got somebody else to assist her. And when they went to the house, because he'd taken her child the same time as he abducted her, he'd beaten the child to death. This matter was settled in, he was found guilty in 2016. But one would think that this case might have been one that fell in the disciplinary inquiries. One would want to know what happened to these particular members. So I think to conclude, the question that one has to ask is that in about 2013, the police's annual report talks about the fact that they were developing a domestic violence strategy. So the question is, what happened to that? Where is it? I mean, I think one of the things that this overview is suggesting is that something very stagnant has happened to the Domestic Violence Act. As you said, the same sets of complaints about monitoring and reporting have been made since 2014. We still see women dying. We need some fresh ideas here around what needs to happen with the policing. And, I mean, is the committee the space that would welcome such ideas? I think, okay, on Monday, the minister wrote in the Daily Maverick that he was going to be launching his policy on barriers to reporting sexual offences and domestic violence. I think the committee should pay careful attention to that. Because having been part of the team that worked on it, one of the recommendations that policy made was that police performance needs to stop counting or being based on the number of domestic violence reports that can be reduced. It needs to actually start monitoring to moving to what's the percentage of compliance of a station with the Domestic Violence Act. And if it's not what it should be, then your performance bonus doesn't come to you. And the same should apply to provincial commissioners. If your province is not doing a good job, then your performance bonus does not come to you. And I mean, I think if one starts to affect people through their performance bonuses, you might start to see the necessary improvements happening. I mean, I think one of the reasons why the provincial departments of community safety gave is the reasons why they were providing such erratic monitoring it, of stations at provincial level, was that this was an unfunded mandate. That when the shift in the legislation occurred in 2012, they didn't get the necessary changes in budget at provincial level, so they didn't have the staff. So I think this is something the committee needs to follow up with. And this question you're asking, how does one exercise better oversight over the provinces? What role can the National Council of Provinces play as well as the provincial legislatures? Because it's quite clear that the change in legislation changed the oversight structure, but I don't think the parliamentary structures have kept pace with that. There's also the question I've already raised, is has National Instruction 7 of 1999 been amended to reflect the change from ICD to CSP? I understand, you know, this change occurred in 2012. Apparently the necessary sign-off was sitting on the commissioner's desk in 2013. Has that been effected? I think the other question is, how can SAPS use their data to provide better policing services? You know, the information that comes in on protection orders tells you an enormous amount about what is happening to those who need protection, what is it that they're asking from the police. And if the police were to start analyzing that, I think they'd get a much better sense of why. You know, if somebody keeps on coming back, they're regarded as a nuisance. But rather what we should be seeing is that they're telling us that the help they're offering is not useful. So we should be asking, well, what is it that we can do instead that would be more useful, not chasing them away as a waste of police resources and somebody who's just withdrawing charges all the time. So we should be looking at that police data. What I think we should also be thinking about is something like establishing a panel that can look independently at all the deaths of women or other family members who die when there is a protection order in place. Somebody should be looking to see, is there police negligence involved? And if so, what do we do about that? And if there wasn't police negligence involved, can this information start helping us get a picture of who are particularly dangerous men? And then from policing points of view, how do you know to identify those and know that there are particular individuals who require special protection, where you must really take the protection order particularly seriously? So I think the SAPs should be using their data as a source of information about improving their services, not just proof of we ticked the box, we did this, we filled out the forms. And then I think the final question is, how do we make the CSP more effective? As I said, they're just a body that makes policy recommendations and counts things. They can't, you know, if the police don't assist them, there's not much they can do about that. As I said, we also don't know what they're doing, and their capacity is to even investigate complaints and accept complaints. So those are some of the questions I'd like to leave the committee with. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fetten. I think there's various questions and concerns that we must deal with going forward in our discussion. Yes, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. My first question will be, SAPS is failing us. You are believing actually on figures that are sent to you. Is there any follow-up that happens? So many kids have been killed brutally. Women have been raped and killed. That then sends me to actually query what schedule do you use to charge these people and to send a strong message to the community and all those who are murderers to say, you do this, this is the end. What is happening? And this overprotection of your members when they've been involved in all these other brutal things. You're talking of a certain punishment. How do you guarantee that they're not going to kill? A murderer is a murderer. And I'm talking as an ordinary citizen across the color line.
If we can just have the Gender Commission's presentation, and then there's a lot of hands that I've saw, and we'll then give ample opportunity for responses. Gender Commission, you are welcome. If we can also, in terms of time, be quite concise and to the point, I'll appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, and good morning to honourable members. this is the findings. Basically, this is an overview of the findings of the report we produced early this year. It's based on the work that we carried out in the 2016-2017 financial year. So this is just an overview of the findings. Okay, this is just the outline of the findings. I'll skip on the mandate of the CGE, assuming that it's a familiar subject to members of the portfolio committee. I'll look at just the background of the study, objectives, method, overview of the findings, and the emerging key issues from our study, and the recommendations. Just the background of the study, as this is familiar to members of Parliament, South Africa's high rate of violence, and these are some of the figures that are quoted regarding violence in South Africa, and that these appear to compare with other figures from the continent. So high rates of violence against women, and the root causes are varied and linked to, in some cases, legacies of the past, injustices, poverty, unemployment, and inequality, and other factors that we can discuss. And the CGE has been, we have prioritized gender-based violence over the last financial year. These are some of the years, starting from 2011, how we have been conducting some of our studies. For instance, we looked at the National Action Plan of the 365-day program that was hashed out at the Kopano Declaration in 2006. We've looked at the work of the National Council on Gender-Based Violence, which has since come to an end. We've looked at the national and provincial government in terms of some of the programs they've put in place to deal with gender-based violence in our 2015-2016 financial year. And last year, that's when we focus on the work of the SAPS, because our mandate is to look at the work of state institutions in terms of what they are doing. All state institutions are obliged by current pieces of legislation to deal with either ensure gender equality in terms of the laws and the constitution, or to combat violence against women. And the 2016-17 financial year, which findings are based on this report, was to look at the SAPS focusing on police station programs. So we went right down to the ground at police station level, individual police stations, to look at what it is they are doing. So we went broader in terms, we were not just focusing on the Domestic Violence Act. We are looking at how the SAPS is complying with various pieces of legislation, including their own station orders, provincial, national, and so on, and local police station programs themselves, what they are doing in terms of those pieces of instruments, legislative and administrative instruments, to put programs in place to deal with violence against women or gender-based violence or domestic violence. The SAPS, it's obvious, SAPS is a critical stakeholder in the fight, not just against crime in general, but against gender-based violence. And in terms of the 365-day program of action, the SAPS and other stakeholders were tasked to strengthen capacities of existing programs, to focus on development and implementation of prevention and intervention programs, and put in place mechanisms to deal with gender-based violence and violence against women. The National Action Plan and the assigned SAPS to ensure that domestic violence is not confined to the private sphere, but is addressed as a crime and a public health issue. And these are some of the pieces of some of the instruments available to the SAPS, South African Police Service Act. SAPS has its own five-year plan of action, the national orders, instructions, and so on, provincial orders and instructions, station orders and instructions. Some of these have provisions relating to dealing with gender-based violence or domestic violence and violence against women. So our study sought to look at not just, as I said, broader work of state institutions, There are plans, programs, and strategies to deal with gender-based violence. But we wanted to look at the SAPS work at police station level. What is it they are doing in terms of the provisions of the Domestic Act, the Violence Act, as one of the primary legislative instruments for the SAPS to deal with gender-based violence. It's empowered the station commanders are empowered to put in place programs and interventions to deal with gender-based violence. So we were looking at this. We talked to station leadership. We selected stations and we spoke to station commanders, where possible, deputy station commanders, as well as selected officials at these stations. Initially, we had selected 12 stations because this is a case study approach. We basically send teams or a team of researchers to visit these stations and speak to station leadership, examine their facilities, look at victim-friendly rooms where they are available, victim empowerment centers. We basically did site visits and spoke to officials, and we sat down with the leadership of the stations in order to understand. So we went there with an open mind to understand what it is they are doing in place to deal with gender-based violence at station level, local initiatives and programs. We had selected 12 stations to look at. Unfortunately, six of them refused to participate. So we ended up able to look at six stations: the Sesego Police Station and Leboa Khomu in Limpopo Province, Berlin Stage Police Station in East London in the Eastern Cape, the Rustenburg Police Stations and Buitekom Police Station in the Northwest. We selected these in terms of how basically the areas they served. They tended to, some of them served large communities from both urban and rural areas, especially those areas where high rates of violence existed. And as I said, we spoke to senior officials, SAPS officials at station level, including looking at available program documentations and work programs and strategies that the SAPS police stations had put in place.
Sorry, just on that issue, on that, I just know those stations that declined to participate, in what provinces are they?
They were Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and Gauteng. There were three in Gauteng that declined, four in Gauteng that declined, and one in Eastern Cape that declined, and one in Limpopo. In most cases, two of them, Polokwane Police Station and Alberton in Gauteng, they just refused to cooperate. The others told us they didn't have time. We repeatedly asked them, and they just didn't make time for us. They said they were too busy.
That is totally unacceptable, and we'll have to deal with that in another form. Yes, Honorable Bele.
Thanks very much, Chair. Yeah, that's also very, very concerning to hear. And it's completely unacceptable, because as soon as I heard the official say that, I had to whip out my copy of the Constitution, where it's very clear that the CGE, like other Chapter 9s, has the power, constitutional power, among other things, to monitor, investigate, research. So there's no option here. There really is no option but to cooperate on the parts of state organs. And it reflects my concern about some of the vague responses in the CSP presentation, in terms of the fact that, again, Section 32 of the CSP Act is very clear that compliance, cooperation on the part of the SAPS is an obligation. They must cooperate, and they must provide information, documentation, and any other assistance needed. So can I request to you, Chair, if perhaps the CGE would relay the information to the committee in writing on those uncooperative police stations, and if we can then look at how maybe in conjunction with the SAPS management, we can get that followed up.
Gentlemen, see, you can maybe also meanwhile look into that issue. But please continue.
Thank you, Chair. These are the three areas that we just wanted to look at when we talked to the police station. We wanted to look at the three key areas: strategic leadership issues at station level, institutional capacity, and GBV or gender-based violence related internal structures, as well as relevant intervention programs and initiatives on the ground. So strategic leadership issues, we wanted to look at the knowledge of the station leadership, commanders and so on. And so what kind of knowledge do they have? Do they have knowledge on issues and causes of domestic violence in their area? The knowledge of key national, provincial, and station-level frameworks to deal with gender-based violence, the ability to develop out of this knowledge, ability to develop long-term strategies and prioritize gender-based violence in their local areas of jurisdiction, as well as to mobilize ability of leadership, strategic leadership, ability to mobilize resources to address challenges of gender-based violence, domestic violence, and violence against women. In terms of institutional capacity and GBV or gender-based violence-related internal structures, we wanted to look at the station's capacity to deal effectively with domestic violence by mobilizing the resources, available resources. By resources, we meant available knowledge at station level, the skills amongst personnel, availability of accurate information on domestic or gender-based violence or violence against women in their areas of jurisdiction, as well as availability of funds. So these are areas or components of capacity as we defined it, and ability to put in place relevant internal structures to deal with GBV. I mean, we know that the Domestic Violence Act does demand certain structures to be put in place to deal with gender-based violence. We wanted to look at, as a form of adding or boosting capacity, available capacity, some stations develop relations with, due to lack of capacity, develop relations with CBOs or civil society structures to work with and in order to augment some of the lack of capacity that they may have. In terms of relevant programs and initiatives, we wanted to see what current programs, intervention, response, and prevention, what kind of programs do they have in place, programs or projects or initiatives to deal with gender-based violence at local jurisdiction level. So these are the key areas that we looked at. And
the emerging issues and the recommendations, the members received, they've read it.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Let me skip to the emerging issues. What we found at station level, in terms of strategic leadership issues, we looked at the six police stations that we looked at. Five of the station commanders were male, and one was female. What we found is that there were some amongst the station commissioners, they did display some knowledge and understanding of some of the key challenges. Some of them were able to tell us the key challenges facing them in their area, the key underlying causes of domestic violence. Some of them, many of them mentioned alcohol abuse and substance abuse as key factors leading to various crimes such as sexual assault, rape, attempted rape, intimidation, and so on and so on. But what we found is that many of them did not have the figures, information at their fingertips. When we asked them, can you show us the figures, many of them did not have that information, which we found surprising because stations, police stations are involved in collecting data, collecting figures relating to crime and violence. So many of them did not have the information readily available at hand to give us. Station leadership were able to provide ideas. They were able to explain some of these underlying causes of domestic violence, but we found that many of them did not have the ability to translate this knowledge into clear strategic plans and programs on the ground. They had the knowledge, but there was lack of ability to transform or to use that knowledge into developing plans to address these programs on the ground. And the common response that we found across all the six stations was that many of them were engaged in awareness-raising programs. That was the most common response, campaigns and awareness programs. But the effectiveness of these campaigns could not be established. Many of them could not tell us how effective these programs were, how sustainable they are, how well-funded they are. But it looked like to us, it appears as the easiest way of responding rather than long-term effective, highly planned or highly thought-out plans of action. In terms of institutional capacity and gender-related internal structures, we found that the most common institutional setup in most police stations was the Victims Support Center. And in some cases, they referred to these as Victims Empowerment Centers. But many of them, as we say, and we admit this, the number of police stations was slow. It was low that we looked at, but it's still concerning to us because what we found is the number of the Victim Support Centers were understaffed, especially in the Rustenburg Police Station. There was only one volunteer that worked in the Victim Support Center. And often they lack basic resources and no guarantees of effectiveness. Basically, the existence of the Victim Support Center does not guarantee effectiveness in dealing with gender-based issues or gender-based violence. The police stations also had the family violence, child protection and sexual offenses unit. However, most of these appeared overstretched and working on a variety of problems, children, domestic crimes, and other general crimes. So they were overstretched. Many of the station commanders were largely unfamiliar with some of the key national policy and legislative frameworks. Some of them had knowledge of the Domestic Violence Act, but the broader national frameworks as well as provincial frameworks. We found limited knowledge amongst the station commissioners. The Victim Support Center and FCS units were largely post-incident, which means they were reactive. And that means that many of the police stations did not have the proactive capacity to deal with violence. They tended to react after violence had occurred rather than be proactive. The capacity for proactive action was, we found that limited. And the resources for some stations, we found limited resources and greater reliance. So the limited resources to deal with GBV violence against women tended to lead stations to rely on ordinary police officers to deal with gender-based violence. But many of these ordinary police officers had limited training and knowledge of these areas, knowledge of areas of GBV, gender-based violence. In some cases, they were exposed to extremely limited training, five-day training once off. We found that to be extremely ineffective in equipping them with the complexities of dealing with gender-based violence. And then in terms of relevant intervention programs on the ground, as I said, police stations that we looked at did not have clear, coherent, and well-defined long-term strategies or plans or programs of action to tackle the scourge of domestic violence. Most of the stations admitted that domestic violence was persisting, if not escalating, at the time of the study. And the leadership were largely not familiar with multi-sectoral or interdepartmental programs to work with other departments, for instance, the Department of Social Development and the Department of the Women's Ministry. We looked at their own programs. These two departments had interdepartmental programs and plans of actions, and some of those plans identify SAPS as a key stakeholder department in their programs, but we found that station commanders in some cases were not familiar with some of these programs and limited capacity to develop appropriate long-term and effective strategies to respond to GBV or gender-based violence. Finally, these are the recommendations that we have developed in our report, that the South African Police Service should develop an internal national program of action to educate and sensitize its senior officers, especially station commanders, deputy station commanders, and related personnel on key national policy and legislative frameworks dealing with gender-based violence and violence against women. Such programs should focus attention on clearly defining the role of the SAPS in general and that of police stations on the ground in implementing national programs of actions to combat gender-based violence and violence against women. We believe the SAPS should strive to develop and enhance current multi-sectoral arrangements with other departments, especially Department of Social Development and the Women's Ministry, and institutions such as the NPA to enhance interdepartmental and interagency collaborative working relations to address gender-based violence and violence against women. SAPS should draw up internal guidelines on the establishment of appropriate and well-resourced internal units to enhance the capacity of individual stations for effective proactive interventions through prevention and response to deal with gender-based violence or violence against women. This could include reviewing and enhancing the effectiveness of victim support centers to equip them with the necessary capacity for effective proactive interventions and responses. Finally, the SAPS stations should provide appropriate training to senior as well as ordinary police officers to equip them with the necessary skills to plan for and implement effective medium to long-term programs of action to combat combat violence against women in their policing precinct. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, we're going to take a 5-minute break. There's new tea available. A 5-minute break and then we'll come back for the questions. Thank you. 5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. Right, members, 2 minutes, 2 minutes. Honourable members, thank you for coming back, and also the delegations. We're going to continue with our meeting, and we're going now to questions. There was already a few questions raised, I think, by the whip and the chair of the Women's Committee, so in the responses, please take that into account. I've seen Honourable Robinson, and then I'll go to Honourable Molabatsi, and yeah, Honourable Robinson, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chair. It's good to have this joint committee. I think we should have more combined meetings, because there's so many aspects that affect all of us. A couple of questions. I was participating in a picket with some people in Atlantis last week, and they were walking in the rain because they wanted to go and say, please, can we have the same seriousness of attention to policing matters in areas which are very poor, and not just the high, you know, the high-profile cases. And there's such a feeling that if you've got money, you get attention and you get justice. And this is not the case for the ordinary people. You've already mentioned how people get chased away and told, come back on Monday when you're not drunk. And I think it's this lack of sensitivity. I don't know how we can deal with it. I experienced this myself. After the picket, I went in and I wanted to speak to one of the officers. And the counselor who was with me was already in the little room talking. And when I asked to join them, I was told by a very pompous, officious little man, no, one at a time. You can't go in. Go away. Now, really, I just think that's totally unacceptable. And I had to plead with him to say, I'm part of this group. And then eventually some of the female officers came along and said, you know, you should allow this. How does one get the sensitivity and having people really care? I mean, this is meant to be a service organization, and I understand the difficulties. But people tell me that they are not given or they don't apply for psychological help or for counseling because this is held against them when it comes to promotion. So we really have a big problem. Something else that has happened there that I've been witness of is that it takes so long for the FCS units and the forensics to come when there has been a crime that you have bodies, corpses, lying in the street for hours. And you know how terrible that is for a mother to see her child just lying there, or anybody for that matter. So I think the FCS units are really stretched, and obviously forensics too. I could go on forever, but I just want to say also the fact that there are so few victim-friendly centers available. Why is that? Is it lack of funding? We have, my organization has worked to assist and to make these places comfortable and pretty. But there's one particular station where a service organization wanted to provide a new victim-friendly center, and they were just totally blocked by red tape. Now, to me, that is so wrong. What is the attitude? No, we don't want your help. We don't need your help. We're fine. Thanks very much. And there was no political connotation to it at all. So somehow it's the morale that we need to get at as well, and the officiousness, and there's no sense of caring about the people who are hurting on the ground. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Robinson. Honourable Molabatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Like I said earlier on, these presentations are very depressing. My first question will be to SAPS to say, how long must it take the maximum for a protection order to be delivered? And my next one is on your disciplinary steps. Clearly, they show that you are not serious with this, because you look at them; they range from written warning to nothing. My other point is on this finalization of cases, which Lisa outlined so well. And in there, tell us about this Kales River case. It's another indication that SAPS is not serious about DVA. And there is this one also of non-compliance. To me, it's equivalent to misconduct. My point now here is, what do you do about this thing? Of this non-compliance, what do we do? Like I say, it's equivalent to misconduct. My other question to the commission is, I'm interested in knowing what did you find at Berlin, because I know for a fact that the previous committee went to Berlin, and guess what we found? We found 22 rape kits that were not delivered to the lab. I'm interested in what did you find there. Thanks, Chair. This will be enough for this round.
Thank you, Honourable Mulabachi. Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation that are stressing us, because which means you don't care about women and children. Yeah, my first question goes to the Secretariat. What steps taken against station commanders failing to complete the SAPS 508 A and B forms for cases of non-compliance, which should be submitted monthly? Please indicate. My second question is going to SAPS. In slide 26, when was the last training on victim empowerment? First responder to sexual offences, domestic violence, and vulnerable children, and how many members attended on your last training? In slide 27, General, do you have a specific date for a national dialogue that will involve the SAPS top management so that we can make a follow-up? You can't tell us that June, July, because now it's June and July is next month. What is the date? So that you can make a follow-up on that. To SAPS again, can you please indicate the reasons for not seizing firearms of members against whom complaints of domestic violence were filed? My next question, SAPS. Total number of complaints, 66 against members. What are you saying about that? In slide 13, I think on the Secretariat, 641 members, departmental investigation found guilty and not guilty is zero. Is this a true reflection? 641 departmental investigations, but zero found guilty and not guilty is zero. Can you please give clarity? I will end here, Chairperson. I will come on the second round. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mula. Professor, you're welcome. Honorable Member.
Thank you. Honourable Chair, I think the questions that we'll be asking will be very similar because of the similarity in the reports. Whether it's with regard to domestic violence or gender-based violence or violence against women, the bottom line is that we are losing the war. Usually people lose the war if they were fighting the war. To a large extent, we are not even fighting the war here because there is so much laxity on behalf of the authorities, that is, law enforcement authorities. I will start with the Western Cape. There is so much domestic violence there that we need to really go back to the drawing board. The strategies, the approaches are just not effective. I don't know whether we should start by addressing the causes of this domestic violence, but what is done so far is just not effective. I don't know if there is anything. Well, from the recommendations, I didn't hear of anything that is fundamental that goes to actually address this kind of domestic violence. Then when it comes to domestic violence generally, the victims will rely on the police officers. But if the police officers themselves are perpetrators, then people give up. This is why in areas like Mpumalanga, you find that there is just 000. I think people are just, they've given up on the police, so they won't participate, they won't report the cases and things like that. So I am concerned with the kind of sanctions in the few cases that are brought to disciplinary inquiry. It seems many of them are not brought to disciplinary inquiry, but those that appear before disciplinary committees, the sanction is a mere slap on the wrist. People are giving verbal warnings. It's certainly not enough. So I agree with the colleagues before me who say there is lack of sensitivity. There is lack of commitment to actually deal with this violence and people are dying. I've heard some of the recommendations. I think there are long-term recommendations like the people should be trained, people should be educated. This is long term. In the meantime, people are dying from this violence. I agree with the colleague who said the arms should be, or the guns should be taken away from these people. I'm concerned finally also with the effect of the protection orders. Either they get to the victim too late, or where they are dishonored, there are no sanctions. What should be done in those cases? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mbele, and then the Honorable Whip.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I am partly covered by some of the colleagues in the questions. Two opening remarks. The first is just to highlight that there is a dedicated section in the reports of the Khayelitsha Commission of Inquiry dealing with recommendations that have national applicability to improve the performance of the police in relation to handling domestic violence. And I'm just curious if the SAP team is aware of those recommendations, were they circulated in order to feed into review processes in that regard. And, you know, in terms of the report from SAPS about, you know, training, capacity building, monitoring and evaluation, those couple of slides were clearly the theory, the policy framework. But I think judging by the non-compliance and underperformance findings from the CGE and the CSP reports, it's quite clear that there's a gap between the theory and the implementation in practice. At the very least, that practice is not, or the implementation is not comprehensive and consistent. As a third point, can I please hand, you know, on my knees, begging, we don't need another national dialogue. We don't need a talk shop. We need training, we need capacitation, we need implementation. We need to get the basics right and implement the policies through effective systems as they exist. Can I urge very strongly that this national dialogue is not a priority? The SAPs need to have their focus elsewhere. Chair, can I restrict myself to 5 questions for this round? I had a whole bunch, but I'm partly covered. The first one is just in terms of slide 3 to the SAPs from their presentation, where it states that the National Commissioner is meant to report on DVA compliance every 6 months. Can I just ask why these reports weren't submitted on time to Parliament? What is the challenge that SAPS is having around compliance, both with that obligation and the implementation of the Domestic Violence Act in general? Second question, Chair, is in terms of the National Development Plan, and I know that it hasn't been fully translated into concrete policy for the SAPS in all aspects. The Transformation Task Team is working on that. But there's a proposal in the NDP for the rollout of what are called community safety centres. And although it's quite a vague concept, it's not defined in the NDP. It has potential as a hub for multi-sectoral partners to address issues such as this. And in particular, I would propose to house emergency shelters for victims of gender-based violence and domestic abuse, and possibly to be the more conducive sites for the VFRs as opposed to police stations. So is the SAPS doing any thinking around unpacking that community safety center proposal in the NDP, especially in relation to domestic violence and gender-based violence? I'm covered on firearm seizures, VFRs. My third question, Chair, is if I can just ask the SAP to respond to Ms. Vetten's contention in her presentation that an internal blockage within the SAPs is the fact that their directives and instructions have not reflected the change in the wording from ICD to CSP. Is that the case? And if so, when is that going to be fixed? Because that's a very simple administrative issue to address if it is the problem that it's being said to be. Fourth question, Chair, is to ask whether is compliance with the Domestic Violence Act an explicit indicator in the performance agreements of station commanders and in the station performance charts? That's one of the recommendations from the Khayelitsha Commission reports, hence the value of that report. Because if it's not explicit in the performance being measured and monitored, feeding into performance bonuses, feeding into promotions, et cetera, then we're missing an entire gap there. I'll make my final question to ask, at what level are complaints according to the Domestic Violence Act investigated? Are those investigations at station level or are they at cluster level? Because one of the recommendations from the Commission report was that these should be done at cluster level so that you don't have the guilty investigating themselves or their buddies investigating them. So at what level are the complaints that have been reported on investigated, station or cluster? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chair. It appears strongly that the station commanders are not fully adherence to compliance to the provision of the Domestic Violence Act and related national instruction and to take decisive disciplinary action against their members who fail to comply in these incidents. So my question is, what is the SEPs do to those station commanders who fail to do their work seriously? And the other question is that many police stations lack facilities to provide consultations due to the absence of trauma rooms or Tutuzela centers. As a result, such victims often have to provide statements in environments that are not conducive to confidentiality or safety. Because in some instances, even the counselors that are assigned to trauma rooms are ill-equipped to deal with those counseling needs of victims of domestic violence. And also the training of those volunteer counselors is not monitored and evaluated. There is also often inadequate supervision of volunteers as well as of a high turnover of volunteers at police station and those Tutuzela centers. But my question is also wanted to know how many Tutuzela centers do we have in this country, in the police stations? And my last question, or the other question, is whether you are able to assist those people with disabilities, especially those who are blind, who needed to report their cases, as well as to assist those deaf victims. Do you assist them with the sign language interpreters so that they can be able to state their cases to those people who are assisted them at that time? And also to the CGEs, that whether they have met with the new leadership of SEPs on these issues that have been their concerns to them. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, Chair, are you covered? Thank you. Maybe just two questions from my side. The proposals made by Ms. Betten, and maybe a question to the Secretary of Police. In terms of playing a more proactive role in terms of liaison with the provinces, because it's quite clear from the data made available today that, I mean, your provincial secretariats are not playing the role they should be. And shouldn't the secretariat at the national level play a more coordinating role, ensuring that there would be proper liaison and also analysis of the current let's say, approach to do station audits and maybe link up with the gender commissions. I think they've got now also a good framework of methodology in doing in-depth interviews, but I mean, to ensure that all the provinces got the same approach, that you don't have in the Western Cape one questionnaire, but I think with Mpumalanga, it's maybe a telephone call or, an interview with the station commander, so that there can be uniformity. I think that is critical, that we move with regard to that. And then the issues also raised, I think, by Honourable Bailey, the fact that there might be a gap also with regard to the CSP, the IPED issues. Isn't it possible maybe for the Secretariat as the advisor to the Minister to establish a reference group? And it doesn't have to be everybody, but there's a few experts in the country that can advise on the current lacunas in the legislation and oversight architecture, and then bring proposals in terms of the regulations, but also the legislation. What can be done to ensure that there is a stronger focus on this issue? That's quite critical to ensure. And then my last question to SEPs. I just want to get a sense, again, the issue of oversight and control. Maybe at national level, who's responsible for focusing on the issue of DVA, and is there interaction with other government departments? Because it's quite clear social development must play an important role, even your municipalities.
because a lot of the issues with relation to domestic violence is about the broader society, education, the role of parents, family, communities, and how we deal with conflict. So it's not only the police must again deal with the byproducts, but the bigger picture is Department of Education, Social Development, just to think of two, that is critical in addressing the symptoms, that we ensure that people don't go to the police station, that it's solved at another level, that at least you don't have a lot of cases, because those issues of conflict must be solved at another level. So I just want to get a sense, what is SAPS doing in the broader context to be proactive? I know it's maybe a difficult one, but let's just think about that as well. Thank you, honorable members. Let's go to the responses. Let's start with SAPS, then Ms. Vetten and Secretariat and the Gender Commission. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable Chairperson. Indeed, domestic violence is a critical area for policing, and we really have our own challenges there and there that we will as well share while we are answering the questions. And I want to appreciate all the questions that were raised and as well as the concerns that were made. With the recommendations of the presentations that were made, we are really going to take it forward and engage further the commissions that have made the presentation so that we can as well get a clear picture of what transpired during the visits of at the police stations. And I'm so much concerned, Honorable Chairperson, with the visit of the GCE at the police stations, and they were refused to access of the management and the documentation. That is not acceptable. I have already sent a message that I need those station commanders and their provincial commissioners to give a report and take me through what is the reason really. Because my understanding, Chairperson, is that the GCE was there to assist us to close the gaps that we are having as an organization. So they will really account on that one. Going straight to the question, Honorable Robertson, the question that you raised about the few VFRs that we are having at the police station, yes, the issue is about funding, that we don't have a full capacity of the victim-friendly rooms at all the police stations, and as well as the blockage that was encountered from the sponsorship that was offered. I will have to make a follow-up on that, because as far as we know is that sponsors need to go through a certain process through our supply chain management. But there is no need for us to refuse, because this is the services that we must give to our communities. The members who doesn't want to be exposed to psychological assessment because of promotions, that is not true. When you are exposed to psychological assessment, it is not used against you when you are applying for promotion. Because if that was the case, then most of us were not going to be where we are today. Because we need to be assessed now and then if we were exposed to situations that were not favorable psychologically. The sense of sensitivity in dealing with the cases of DV, we are experiencing this, and we always encourage our members to be sensitive. And the courses that are offered as well talks to the sensitivity that the members must have in terms of domestic violence. And I must give this indication, Chairperson, that I know that most of the honorable members here, when they check their assessment on sensitivity, they will indicate to us that most of the people who were not sensitive are our male colleagues. But the higher percentage, I see the Chairperson is saying no, but we have noted that in terms of the sampling that we had, that was the percentage, but they are exposed to training on being sensitive. You know, we go as far as indicating to them that you need to put yourself in the shoes of the victim. Just imagine if your sister, mother, or whoever is the person who's reporting.
How were you going to react? You need to utilize that emotions when we are dealing with the victims of DV, because this is really a sensitive issue. Honorable Molibasi, ask us how long must it take for us to serve a protection order. The protection order must be served immediately when it is received. So we have to make a follow-up on the specific cases where the protection order took long to be served. Because when a victim receives, he has got a protection order, he goes to the police station and it is registered. And we've got dedicated members at police station who are serving these protection orders and ensuring that it is complied with. The disciplinary steps that were taken against our members, they show a less interest, if I may put it like that, because of the written warnings and the verbal warnings that are granted to the members. But I must say that taking back the performance of the seriousness of the members dealing with the domestic violence, you will have seen that previously we had a challenge, Honorable Chairperson, of the members who were operationally committing misconduct. That is not serving the protection orders. But these cases that you are speaking to mostly are the administrative errors where a member didn't fully complete the register. Maybe there is a column that was not completed, maybe on the time that it was served, who served that protection order. So those are the errors that where the members' written warnings are given. And we've got a period when we give our members a written warning. That written warning stays in the file of a member for 6 months, taking note that the member must never repeat such a misconduct. And we've got as well remedials that we expose our members to not to falter.
General, just a follow-up from Yes. Bailey on one of the responses.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a very quick follow-up with the General in terms of the fact that the protection orders have to be served immediately. Could you let me know what is the national instruction or the standing order that governs that time frame or that immediacy issue? Is it there in black and white somewhere or
Thank you, Honorable Mbele. I don't have that national instruction currently, and I can't recall the number, but I can make it available to yourself. Thank you. On the finalization of the cases, Honorable Molibazi, we need to report on the case, refer case, that happened on 2014, if my memory serves me well. That case, we don't have the information now. Can we be allowed, Honorable Chair, to provide that information in writing? The non-compliance misconduct are as well treated as we indicated in our present.
Honorable Molibazi.
Still on that one, to also tell us what did you do to address the problem.
Thank you. The non-compliance on the misconduct, what did we do about it? As we have made it visible in our presentation on the non-compliance, what the members who were charged were given written warnings and the verbal warnings. And those, the serious cases, of course, the members face the discharge or they are dismissed or dealt with the fines. Honorable Mula, I think the first question, if I heard you correct, the steps that were taken against the station commanders, the 508, that question was referred to CSP? Okay. The training on slide 26, we requested to make visible of the last training and as well as the members who were trained, who were exposed to training during that period. I will request a Director Madi to respond on that later on.
on slide 27, the specific date for the dialogue. Currently, as you are correctly, you correctly said that June has already passed already, and we mentioned June and July. Our dates were are dependent on the availability of the minister, and the minister's office indicated that he will be available in August. So we will be sharing the exact date with the honourable members in writing. The reasons for not seizing the firearms of perpetrators. We have made it visible in the presentation that the firearms of the members who were issued with the SAPS 108 firearms were seized. The members were, the numbers difference is the members who were not having the SAPS 108 firearms. And I must indicate that we have instituted a collaboration between the divisions that when a person has been declared, whether it's private or a member of the SAPS, when the person is declared unfit to possess a firearm, immediately we go and seize those firearms. Yes, currently I must indicate that, Honorable Chairperson, we are having a backlog because we are clearing our systems, but with the members of the SAPS, if we note that the member has a private firearm, because what happens immediately when the case is reported, we immediately check on the Firearms Act if the member, our systems, if the member has a private firearm and official firearms. Both firearms are seized on the SAPS members. But now we are making follow-ups on the cases of domestic violence for privately owned firearms of the members of the communities. A total number of complaints, 66 against members. And what are we saying about it? There, I didn't get you clear, Honorable Mulibatsi. Or Honorable Muller.
Date of the firearm not seized. Yes, 66 members. Firearms not seized.
Thank you, Honorable Muller. The.
Yes, Mulibatsi.
I'm sorry. Remember that case in Gauteng, where a policeman's firearm was confiscated, and but from nowhere he managed to go to the CSC and book a firearm and killed so many people. Remember what happened there?
Okay, I think I remember the case, Honorable Mulibatsi. I think it's the case of Alexander, if I'm not mistaken, where Constable Masia shot at the commander in the CSC. I'm happy I'm not related to him. Shot at the commander as well in the CSC and shot at and killed himself. What transpired, I'm not having the correct status and the issues that the case entailed. But what transpired, the member was not in possession of firearm, as you are saying. And he, when he booked on duty, he used to book the firearm and go and work and book it back. But it is the negligence of the relief commander and the station commander not ensuring that that member doesn't come any near to the firearms. So they were both charged, the station commander and the relief commander and the visible commander.
Even after the confiscation, they still have access to firearms. You see, that's the problem. That is the biggest problem.
Thank you so much. After that incident, yes, we have made our senior managers aware of that. Although I must say, Instructions are there. It's just that some of the managers, they are negligent in compliance, because they were supposed to ensure that that member doesn't get that those that firearm. So hence they were charged, Honorable Chairperson.
Responses. Thank you. There's another hand, Chair, at the back. Sorry, General.
Unfortunately, my questions were not answered. I asked directly to know the schedule you choose to charge those people.
I think we note that, but General, you can continue with the other responses. Thank you. Thank you, Chair, for that.
Okay, noted. I will come back and respond to that. The other question, okay, there was a concern that was raised about the laxity in law enforcement and the strategies that are not effective. I just want to say that we have noted that some of the it's not that the strategies are not working, but on the implementation phase, you get challenges of some of the officers who are not in compliance. That is visible in our presentation of the non-compliance. But hence, we have requested to have a dialogue with all the stakeholders. And I must indicate that all the stakeholders are going to be invited to this dialogue, because, you know, as the SAPS, we might have the data in terms of the reporting, the information that is there, but we think that the stakeholders have more information that they can share with us, and that they can as well make some fresh ideas to us, so that we can improve the manner in which we police the domestic violence. It is very crucial for us to have this dialogue, really, so that we can touch base and close the gaps on everything. And the dialogue will be so open. Why I'm saying open is that we are not going to direct the stakeholders what to say, because this dialogue aims at improving our services to our victims as well, and how we can best deal with the perpetrators. Honorable Mbele, the dedicated section that you spoke to of Khayelitsha, and whether we are dealing with the recommendations as they are stated, yes, there is a team in the SAPS that is tasked to check all the recommendations, and now and then they are giving direction to all the provinces and as well as the divisions on how to deal with the recommendations that are there. Unfortunately, with the dialogue, Honorable Mbele, we have aims and objectives that we want to achieve with the dialogue, so we cannot suspend it for now. I think when the dialogue is finished and then we've got the report, the honorable members will have an insight of what has the dialogue addressed in our challenges in policing the DV.
Well, my only point would be, as long as it adds value, that's
yes,
that's the key.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Honorable Mbele. Definitely it will add a value. And the issue of us submitting reports, not adhering to our obligations in terms of the acts, I must indicate that, Honorable Chairperson, the reports were submitted to the office of the ministry. Unfortunately, things happened, and hence the reports were not tabulated, but the reports were there. The only report that is outstanding is the latest report that we didn't present here, that is forwarded as well to the office of the ministry. The proposal of the community safety centers to be a more viable area for our VFR. It is taken, and we will check and see if really we can be able to do it. I think for our victims, it will be a good thing because they are not, they will not be in the in the police stations where they feel further victimization or otherwise. So I think that is a good proposal, and it will be looked at. And the community safety centers, I think that is the area that we need as well to communicate with the MECs at the provinces, because of the community safety issues mostly are dealt with them, and that's where we collaborate to ensure that we realize this type of recommendations and proposals. But it will be a good thing, Honorable Mbele.
Sorry, General, Honorable Bailey, just to follow up.
Thanks, Chair. It's just a very quick follow-up that I just thought of now is, I'm just curious, and the General may not be aware because it may not be at in her area, but has the issue ever been raised at the MINMEX? And if not, can I suggest that the MINMEC become the forum for that? Because you need the cooperation with provincial and actually local governments as well, but we are started provincial.
Thank you. I will forward it to be raised to the MINMEC through our Acting National Commissioner. Thanks. The question about the name of ICD to CSP, the national instruction was corrected in 2012 of the names, and as well of the obligation of sending the reports to the CSP. Thanks. I can make a available that national instruction to the honorable members. Whether the compliance in DV, an explicit indicator in performance agreement of the station commanders and any other levels, yes, they are. It is one of the performance indicators in their agreement. And as well, it lies as well for monitoring and to ensure compliance in our annual operational plan of the division visible policy. At what level is the complaints of DV investigated at station? What happens immediately that there is a non-compliance on the side of the members? The cluster commander then appoints an investigator and the person who will be a presiding officer to deal with the misconduct. What is the SAPS doing in terms of failure by station commanders to ensure compliance of the Act? If a station commander failed to comply with the Act, action steps are taken against them. Currently, I don't have a stats that are saying they were given verbal warnings. But I can make a visible a report pertaining to station commanders who faced the disciplinary hearings. Currently, I don't have the status whether there was verbal, there was written, or what sanction was given.
So you have a written report?
Yes, Honorable Chairperson. Where the police stations are lacking facilities to take statements from our victims, if there is no victim-friendly room at a police station, our approach is very clear. The victim needs to be taken at a separate area from the CSC so that the statement must be taken from him. It's either an office or it's an extended CSC where most of the time, Honorable Chairperson, you will find a data type is sitting capturing dockets.
So the members who are not having available offices next to the CSC, normally what they do, they will request the data typist to get to go out and they take the statement of the victim from there. The number of Tutuzela centers that we have, Director Mati will respond to that question because we do have the figures with us. The assistance that we are giving to our vulnerable groups, the deaf and the blind, we have made it visible to our during our presentation as well that last year we, 2016, we have developed a braille to assist our vulnerable groups to be aware what needs to be done when they are victims and what assistance can they get from the SAPS. And what happens, as we indicated, that in the VFRs, we do have in other areas specialized people who are assisting the SAPS. Because currently, I must say, Honorable Chair, we don't have that capacity of enough members who are trained in sign language. So we utilize the services of the professionals who are assisting us in our stations for this.
Thank you. In relation to that, I'd just like to ask the question, are you aware of the fact that Miss Deaf South Africa received humiliating treatment, she was mocked at and she was derided when she went to report a case? Has any action followed on that? Because what I heard was really bad.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I don't have any insight of that incident. However, if I get all the information, I will be able to make a follow-up. Is really not acceptable. Honorable Chair, I think this question will be best answered maybe by the CGE, whether we did meet with them or not. Yes. But I must say that the report that was given today, it was first time that I see it as well. So, yes, they might have met with other levels in the subs. I'm not aware.
Meet with station commanders. That's on record.
Yes, and those yes, that is on record. I'm happy about it, but I'm still not happy about the station commanders who didn't give access. I am going to deal with them. Thank you, Honorable Chair. The proposal from Ms. Ventins, we have taken note of the proposals, Honorable Chairperson. I must just indicate that it was just unfortunate for us, delegation, because we didn't have the performance of the SAPS from 2002 to 2011. We just concentrated on the current years. So we cannot compare the performance then. And Honorable Chairperson, you ask us a question, who is responsible for DVA and is there an interaction with other departments? In our division, the person who is responsible for DVA is the director here sitting with us, and she will be able to elaborate on the interaction of with the other departments. Department of Education, yes, we are interacting, as well as social development, but she will give more meat to the answer when she responds. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, General, you're covered. Yes, Chair, you're welcome.
Unfortunately, you haven't answered my question. And it's simple. When the perpetrators are caught, what schedule are you using to ensure that they go behind bars? Okay?
Thank you, Chair. Right. Like the General Brigadier or Director,
I think the schedule will maybe the understanding of the question, maybe just to try to answer that one. I think the schedule will depend on the type of the crime that has been committed. If it's murder, then it will be murder that has been registered.
What schedule?
Schedule 1 offense.
Beg your pardon?
Criminal Procedure Act, it will be Schedule 1.
This is premeditated, gruesome, and there's death.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you say 1.
No, 1 is the most serious.
Okay.
I would ask you to go and look at it thoroughly the next time you give us a correct answer, because that is where these people run around and keep on murdering because they are charged on the wrong shed.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. I will just talk to the issue of the coordinating structure that we are having, which is coordinated by Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, where Department of Social Development and Correctional Services and Health and other departments like Department of Education, we are sitting to ensure the monitoring of DVA. So we're having that structure that is actually coordinating that to ensure monitoring of the Act. The issue of training for this financial year alone, I can indicate for 2017-18, a total number of 523 members have already been trained on specific courses like victim empowerment training program, domestic violence learning program, children and youth at risk, human rights in policing programs, which are more related, first of responders to sexual offenses, as well as vulnerable children courses that has been already conducted during this financial year. There's a program that our training has in relation to how are they going to unfold the training within this current financial year. If the Brigadier can talk to the Tutuzela Centers, Brigadier.
There's three of hands. Welcome, Honorable Shlongu. Good to see you. First you, and then Honorable Bailey follow-ups. Thank you.
No, thanks, General. General, you know, as I'm listening, I wanted to find out, particularly from our experience in our visit to UK, where it became very clear that there must be a steady build-up capacitation of this particular unit, taking into account the diverse requirements that need to be put in place, and also a kind of funding for certain for this capacity building. I hear General talking about training and all that. I wonder as to what kind of in that particular training, does it involve code of good practice as part of inducement to officers that are responsible for this? And do you have officers responsible for DVA in all police stations earmarked solely for that? I just want to get that, or you just allocate dockets to the detective department and all that, which has got no specialization whatsoever insofar as this particular thing. That is my own question, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shlongu. Honorable Bele.
Thank you, Chair. It's just a quick follow-up to make sure that I had the correct understanding from what the General said. So in terms of the multi-stakeholder programs, is it the case that the Justice Department is always the lead department? So is Justice is always meant to lead in bringing SAPS on board DSD? Is that the case?
Thank you, Members. Let's go to the SAPS. At the back, the whip. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Okay. My question is about the re-offended of the members. because you don't have a report saying that what are you what are you doing with those who still continuing offended the system. And the other thing is whether as subs, since there is this escalating of the killings of women and children, have you considered establishing a specialized unit that will deal with this issue? As well as now we have heard that there is the killing of people because of the selling of their body parts, which is now in the media. Have you done something about that, or you're just concentrating on those issues rather than those criminal elements that are now in South Africa, where people are very scared to even to go out at night because there are people who are chasing them with the meaning of killing them and selling their body parts. Thank you.
Remember, right, Saps, those additional questions, and then we will go to CPS and, of course, the other contributors. Yes.
Honorable Chairperson, through you, I will request that the other questions that we didn't answer that I referred to the director, I will allow her to answer first, then I will deal with the last questions.
Director.
Thank you, Chairperson. Regarding the Thuthuzela care centers, or maybe could I start with the victim-friendly rooms? What are they? They are private spaces where we then take down statements. They are not victim support centers, which would be a broader mandate. However, our members know that in terms of referring services, they need to ask the victim, what other service do you require? And have a list of, an updated list of organizations, of those services that they can then refer the person to, so that the person can be referred to counseling. You can go and see the power people at a number such and such on such a street and so on. That would normally be our practice. Now, having said that, Chairperson, in terms of linking up with integrated services at one-stop centers, like the TCCs and Kuseleka centers, we have currently, of the 9 TCCs, the Thuthuzela care centers being where you have the sexual offences specialized investigations being conducted. Of the 9 TCCs in the Eastern Cape, we have 65 stations close to those TCCs that would then utilize the TCC and work at it. The Thuthuzela care center being what? Being where you will find the prosecutor, you will find psychosocial services also being referred to the TCCs. Just so that there is an integrated case management and victims of sexual offences are dealt with as quickly as possible. Now, in certain cases, those victims of sexual offences are also victims of domestic violence, like your uncles who commit incest on children. I'm just giving, you know, examples. And then in Free State, of the 4 TCCs that are found there, we have 36 police stations linked to them, closest to those 4. In Gauteng, it's 7 TCCs utilized by 90 police stations that are linked to them. The biggest one, of course, as you may be aware, is the Ntabiseng Baragwanath TCC. Then of the 6 in KZN, you have 8 TCCs utilized by 63 stations, 6 TCCs utilized by 35 stations, 5 TCCs utilized by 29 stations, 4 TCCs utilized by 25, 5 utilized by 31, and 5 TCCs in Northwest, 5 against 31, and 5 in Western Cape utilized by 57 police stations. Coming to the Khuseleka one-stop centers, now Khuselekas are coordinated by the Department of Social Development. TCCs are normally located at hospitals and coordinated by either Department of Health or the NPA, the National Prosecuting Authority. Now, with the Khuseleka, what we have, the status is 4 Khuselekas, which Khuselekas in the Eastern Cape, utilized by 36. We don't have Khuselekas in Free State, Gauteng, KZN, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, Western Cape. The one Khuseleka that's in Limpopo is utilized by 97 police stations. The two Khuselekas in Northwest are utilized by 13 police stations. I hope that answers that issue. There was also the question in the establishing. What had I written, General? What did you ask me to also answer? I'm so sorry about that. I think that's the question of the protection orders. That did we answer that? I think in yes, we didn't answer that. In part, it was, oh, we did. Oh, okay. Sure, thanks. Sorry? We wouldn't have the specific dates. However, let me see. For the 2016-17-18 period, we have so far the current training. National Victim Empowerment Learning Program, we have 13 trained members. I think it would have been in the last quarter. Then 17, oh, on domestic violence, we have 200 trained members. On children, youth, okay, not relevant, which one? First responder would be relevant. First responder, you sexual offenses learning program, you have 9 members that were trained. Another relevant one is the vulnerable children course, which also covers child abuse issues, which could be family-related or domestic. We have 156 trained members in the last quarter.
Right. Thank you, General. Maybe the last ones. Members, we've got only 13 minutes left for this meeting, so I want to conclude with SAPS that we can move on to the other presenters. Thank you.
No, sorry. I wanted to know whether we do have members dealing with the DBA.
Stations, yeah. No, the general indicated she's going to deal with it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Thank you, General. Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The re-offenders question whether what are we doing with them in the SAPS. Currently, I don't have the number of the re-offenders. Everything is on the presentation that we had, but we can then refine and have the re-offenders only a number so that it can be made visible and what happened to those re-offenders, Chairperson. Then on the issue of do we have dedicated officers to deal with the DVA, we have the FCS unit that is dealing with all the DVA cases currently in the SAPS. With the escalating of killings of women and children, and as well as the kidnappings that are happening and the killings of our women, the escalating of all the cases against women and children are dealt with the FCS. And with the current situation that the country is facing of the kidnappings and the killings of women, the Acting National Commissioner instructed that we have a team that will be looking at these kidnappings, so that we are able to analyze and unpack, utilizing our crime intelligence, on so that we can solve this problem. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Secretary, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Honorable Chair. We had four questions, but I will just address the two, and my colleagues will deal with the other ones. In terms of a coordinated approach and ensuring uniformity, one of the things that we have already decided to do is this the report that is going to come now in August. We will do verification in terms of the information that we get from the provinces. Instead of relying on what is on the spreadsheet, we will have to go and verify by going to the size themselves, so that we are clear of that. But also, we have quarterly meetings of HOD forum, and we also have bi-monthly meetings with the provincial secretariat. So one of the issues that will make sure that this becomes a standing agenda in those forums, because we can see that we have got a weakness in terms of dealing with that, and also highlight it so that in the MINMEC meetings, which are quarterly, this matter is put in there, and we put it and we highlight it and make sure that it's presented properly. Also, the other measure that we've put in is the compliance forum that we have resuscitated at provincial level and also the national level, which now I think it was last month where we had a meeting with SAPS and provincial secretariat, and also members of SAPS at provincial level. That is going to be an issue that makes sure that coordination happens effectively. The issue of the reference groups. Our regulations in chapter 8, regulation 30, actually establish what reference groups we should have. And the fourth reference group, which is there, is the implementation of the Domestic Violence Act. I must indicate that in the last year, because we had this reference group, which I'm happy to announce that Ms. Vetten was part of that reference group. The only problem was we had a lapse, that in the previous year there hasn't been a meeting. And when we saw her report, we realized that we could have benefited a lot from that if these issues were dealt with at the reference group. And now we are going to make sure that we revive this reference group, and it has to meet quarterly. And the regulations now are much clearer in terms of how you appoint that reference groups, and the terms of reference is clear at high level, and then we will have specific terms of reference for these specific reference groups. And my chief director has committed that from the next quarter, this reference group is going to actually be up and running, and we will report to the portfolio committee. Thanks. Over to you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. The first question, I think, is from Honorable Muller with regard to the slide as reflected there. Yes, the numbers that are there, the 66, is the firearms that were not seized, based on the 185 subs offenders. So basically, from the 185, only 50 were seized. Then the 66 were not seized. The 6 that is reflected there as not applicable is those members who are doing administrative work and are not necessarily having firearms. Then the 63, which is not specified, is the ones that we can assume that possibly they were not seized. Then the last question, I think it was with regard to SAPS 508. Yes, there are challenges that we are trying to resolve through the compliance forum. So, but the procedure that we have agreed with SAPS is provincial commissioners will send the reports monthly to the SAPS national, and also to our provincial secretariat. Then SAPS National will consolidate and send us the consolidated national picture quarterly. And the same will also happen with the provincial secretariat. After they've consolidated, then they will forward those to us, which will now even give us an opportunity to cross-reference against what we will have received from SAPS National and from the provincial secretariat. Thank you.
In the commission?
thank you, Chair. I had two questions from two honorable members. The first question was from Honorable Mlebatsi about the Berlin station and what we found. What we found was that we got the indication was that domestic violence was not a major issue in that area. And the station commander basically said that cases of domestic violence were being reported, but it was not a major issue. So maybe tallies with the honorable member's statement that there were rape kits that were not being distributed. Maybe there's a sense of complacency at the station. We did find that they had a victim empowerment center which was not working. It didn't have the resources, and it was actually being run by an NGO on the basis of a memorandum of understanding with the police station. So they admitted that it was not functioning, it was ineffective, and it was not properly equipped. And there was also, the station commander admitted that victims were large number of victims were refusing to open cases against perpetrators, and in instances where cases were opened, many victims withdrew those cases, and there was nothing that the police station could do. The second question, I think, was from Honorable Chief Whip, who asked whether we met with the new SAPS leadership. We haven't met them formally at national level. When the report was formally published in April, what the commission had wanted to do was to set up a meeting with the Women's Ministry to brief the Women's Ministry first, so that hopefully there would be an arrangement with the Ministry of Police to brief them before we go downwards. But unfortunately, at the time, the Women's Ministry was attending the CSW in the United States. So we formally wrote a letter asking them to indicate to us when they would be available for us to formally meet with them and do a presentation to them. And we are still waiting. They haven't informed us as to their availability. We actually even submitted a written submission, the presentation that we made today. We submitted to the Women's Ministry in March, and asked them that we would have liked to do a face-to-face meeting with the ministry, and we asked them to indicate their availability, and we are still waiting. We haven't met the Women's Ministry yet. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm the commissioner on the Commission for Gender Equality. I just want to make a point in relation to that, Chairman, that in our
I'm sorry, I'm a rural person. In our monitoring and evaluation functions as a Chapter 9 institution, we find that government departments and institutions in general are kind of reticent, you know, to cooperate, unless so directed specifically by the portfolio committees with oversight over them. So it is quite an important role that you are playing as a portfolio committee when there are these overlapping issues to actually give a specific directive to those affected institutions to actually, you know, cooperate in order to advance the democratic agenda. I just want to make that point. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you for your input. Thank you also for Dennis. Just finally from you before we go to Ms. Betten.
Okay. Okay, Chairperson. Thank you very much for inviting us to this meeting. We have learned a lot. But my question, the last question that I have asked is around the issue of police, the number of police who killed their partners with firearms has not yet been answered.
We'll go to that. Ms. Faiton, anything from you finally?
It's a question of clarity and a follow-up from the comment that the national instructions were amended in 2012.
I have the minutes of this committee of 2015, and perhaps because Ms. Gongwane is here, she can clarify. It says SACS at provincial level did not report to the provincial secretariats as expected in terms of the DVA and national instruction as a result of a lack of an internal directive from SACS compelling its members to do so in the absence of the amended national instruction. So that was in 2015. Can we have some, could there be some clarity as to what the difficulty is and if it has been addressed yet? Thank you.
Thank you very much. So the final two questions is to SAPS. Can we just have responses in terms of the list of partners being killed and the issue raised by Ms. Betten? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Currently, I don't have the list of our members who killed their partners. Yes, we are aware there are those incidents, but I don't have the list and what transpired after that. So we can as well give that in writing, the list of members. The issue of the last question that was raised now of the reporting to CSP, giving reports and of 2015, I am not aware that we didn't give those reports. We have given all our reports and hence they will be able to be tabulated and yesterday by the minister.
Right, I think we... Honourable
Mbele. Chair, it's on that point. My understanding of what Ms. Britton was saying was that either there's been a misalignment or the general might not have the accurate information around the question of amendments of the national instruction, because there was a testimonial to this committee just less than 2 years ago to say that at that point the instruction had not been amended yet, but the response we got from the general was that it was amended in 2012. So either we're not talking about the same instruction, or yeah, something is amiss there. Yeah,
I think we need that as well in writing, that we can get clarification on that. So thank you, honourable members, as well as the delegations from the Gender Commission, as well as CSP and South African Police Service, and also the chair and the whip and members of the committee, portfolio committee. Sorry, honourable Bele, I want to close.
No, I'm very sorry. It's a very, very short input, which was in relation to what Ms. Witten had raised around the teeth, if you will, of the CSP. Can I suggest for the record that although the CSP Act compels compliance, it doesn't, unlike the IPUD Act, create an offence for non-compliance. And can I suggest for the record that it forms part of the agenda of this committee before the end of this fifth parliament that we amend the CSP Act to give teeth to it, that non-compliance becomes an offence, as is the case with the IPUD Act.
Thank you. We note that. Thank you very much, members. I think it was important. It was important meeting that we at least know what is happening with regard to the report. So we've got an update now. But we, in August, I think in the third week, we will again have the same meeting. We'll again invite, of course, the Portfolio Committee of Women, and also I think the Gender Commission played a very important role, a very good professional input. That we also receive the further reports, that we're up to date with all the reports. But then it's quite essential also the Civilian Secretariat, they must ensure that they do evaluation of the information they get from the provinces. We will also invite the provinces. So our meeting will maybe go into the afternoon as well. We will have to get the secretaries of the 9 provinces here, that we can understand what process is being undertaken in provinces with relation to performance. Then we also need an update on the standing orders of the SAPS, but also in terms of what process is with regard to other departments. We've heard today there is meetings, but we need a full picture, because the issue of domestic violence is not only related to police. Education, social development, and maybe we must also invite their committees, because it's a wider community effort that's needed to deal with the issues. So thank you very much, honourable members. Then we will come back to you, and we also invite the same people in August. Thank you very much. The meeting is closed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you very much.
You know, when you're in the office, 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 you're